जयं शुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमान अभय चरणारविंद भक्तिवेदांत गोस्वामी महाराज शील प्रभुपाद की जयं नित्यलीला प्रविष्टा विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमान भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती महाराज शील प्रभुपाद की अनंतमोड़ी वैष्णव वृंद की नामाचार्य शील हरिदास ठाकुर की प्रेम सहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरी भक्तवृंद की श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोविनाथ श्याम कुंड राधा कुंड गिरी गोवर्धन की वृंदावन धाम की मायापुर धाम की मधुरपुरी धाम की जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की द्वारकापुरी धाम की गंगा माई की यमुना माई की तुलसी देवी की भक्ति देवी की सामवेद भक्तवृंद की गौर प्रेमानंदी ऑल ग्लोरीज टू असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale, Srimade Bhaktivedanta Swaminidhi Namine, Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pracharini, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, Paschatya Deshatarini. ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम पार्थाय प्रतिबोधिदां भगवदां नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराण मुनिनां अध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणी भगवती अष्टादशाध्यायिनी अम्ब त्वामनुसन्धदामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी नमोऽस्तुते व्यास विशालबुद्धे फुल्लारविन्दायतपत्रनेत्र येन त्वया भारततैलपूर्ण प्रज्वालितो ज्ञानमय प्रदीप प्रपन्नपारिजाताय तोत्रवेत्रैकबाणये ज्ञानमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृतदुहे नमः सर्वोपनिषदो गावो दुग्धा गोपालनन्दन पार्थो वल्स सुदीर्भोक्ता दुग्धं गीतामृतं महत् वसुदेवसुतं देवं कंसच्चानूरमर्दनं देवकी परमानन्दं कृष्णं वन्दे जगद्गुरुं भीष्मद्रोणतडाजयद्रतजला गान्धारनीलोत्पला शल्यग्राहवदी कृपेण वहनी कर्णेन वेलाकुल अश्वत्थामा विकर्णघोरमकरा दुर्योधनावर्तिनी सोत्तीर्णखलु पाण्डवैरणनदी कैवर्तकेशव പാരാശര്യവജ സരോജമലം ഗീതാർത്ഥഗന്ധോൽക്കടം നാനാഖ്യാനകേസരം ഹരികഥ സംബോധനാബോധിതം ലോകൈ സജ്ജന ഷൽപദൈരഹരഹ പേപീയമാനം മുദ ഭൂയാത് ഭാരത പങ്കജക്കലിമല പ്രധ്വംസിന ശ്രേയസേ മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതി ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം യം ബ്രഹ്മാവരുണേന്ദ്രരുദ്രമരുദസ്ത്വന്വന്തി ദിവ്യൈസ്തവൈർവേദൈ സാംഗപദൈക്രമോപനിഷദൈർ ഗായന്തിയം സമഗാഹ ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിത തദ്ഗതേന മനസാ പശ്യന്തിയം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദസുരാസുരഗണേ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമഃ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ How a gunatita, one who has transcended the three modes, how he acts in the, what will be his nature? That's what Krishna is saying. Udasinam udasinam gunaryo na vichalyate gunavartandam ityeva yo avadishtari nengade. Gunam, none of the three modes of nature has any more influences him in anything. Udasinam udasinam. So we said yesterday that the one while execution of bhakti, he is conscious that the chanting the holy name, And Krishna is working through him. In other words, he has surrendered to Krishna all his body, mind, senses, everything. Like in the earlier verse, he said that Janma Mrtyu Jara Dukkar Vimuktam Amritam Asnude, in the 20th verse. So that Janma Mrtyu Jara Dukkam Vimuktam, freedom from all that. And therefore Krishna said Jara Marana Mokshaya earlier. Jara Marana Mokshaya Mama Ashrite Yadandiye Te Brahma Tadvidu Krishnam Adhyalpam Karma Chakhilam. So you can see how Krishna has connected that with the taking shelter. Here Krishna is saying, Janma Mrtyu Jara Dukkar Vimuktam Amritam Asnute. As far as Krishna is concerned, in this world, there is no other problem except this. Janma Mrtyu Jara Dukkam or Janma Mrtyu Jara Vyadhi, whichever way you call that. So Krishna sees the problems, what we think about this world is different. And Krishna is concerned, they are not problems at all. Provided we act properly. But that's not what's happening, so therefore we have problems. Krishna is saying, you have come to this world to solve this problem. Janma Mrtyu Jara Vyadhi or Janma Mrtyu Jara Dukham. How to become vimuktam from that, free from that. For that purpose, Krishna says, I have sent you here. But you are busy with all your other problems. What can I do about it? So Krishna is saying that for Janma Mrtyu Jara Vyadhi Jara Dukham Vimuktam, he says, first thing what you do is Jara Marana Mokshaya Mama Ashrite Yadandiye, take my shelter first, and then we can do all other things. So even when we study Bhagavadam or Bhagavad Gita, Mama Ashrite Yadandiye, Krishna is saying that taking my shelter and do it. Everything is more important than anything else is this shelter, right? Whereas if you start taking it on your shoulders and thinking that by your cleverness or you are smart, therefore whether you do a business or you chant the holy name, ultimately only when you have surrendered it will have some benefit. Otherwise there won't be any benefit. So, because there, when it is surrendered, there is no selfishness, there is no ahankaram there, and the I am the doer is not there. Only in that state, even sadhana will be effective. So this tattva vijaram, tattva nischayam, or determination of this tattvam is required in everything. If not, if you don't do that, what will happen is, the three modes of material nature will carry you away. It will take you away. It won't allow you to get the benefit. If it is not done in that surrendered nature, taking Krishna's shelter, if it is not done, the three modes of material nature will get in and it will take care of everything. And then it's lost. It's gone. Right? So, just like when a tsunami comes, you won't be able to stop it. Is it not? The three modes of material nature is like that. Like a tsunami, it comes and it takes you away from everything, right? Similarly, that is how the three modes are. Without taking Krishna shelter, if you engage in sadhana, it will fail, Krishna is saying. Because three modes of material nature will take care of it then. You'll fall into three modes and the three modes will affect your sadhana as well. Your sadhana will be affected by the three modes, and then that sadhana also becomes wasted. So that's what he is saying there. You see that? Udasina vadasinam gunaryo navijayade gunavartanda mityeva yo avadishtadi nengade. So what he said before, that to be established in the self, swarupam, that's more important. Abide by that, nengade, right? Means that you are not sticking to the modes of nature. You are not allowing to stick to the modes of nature. And when you have come out of the mind, free from the mind, and when you are not established in the self, the problems of the mind, good and bad, what is in the mind, that will not that will not affect him. Suppose you have taken shelter. In other words, when you become established in the self, the influence of the mind goes away. It does not affect him. And that's what Krishna is saying in the next verse. Samadhukha sukha swastham samal oshtashma kanjana tulya priya priyo dhira tulya ninda alpa samstuti. So, earlier he said that the body, senses, sense objects, what are they? Three modes of nature. Three modes of nature is transformed in these forms, body, senses, and the sense objects. And they are working together all the time, because they are all three modes of nature, body, senses, and the sense objects. They are all three modes of nature. And they all interact with each other. And one Gunadhidan knows this. One who has transcended the three modes, he knows about that. And avadishtadi gunavartam ityava avadishtadi nengade. He says, one who has realized the self, for him he is not affected by any of those things. Now, this verse which he is saying now, this next verse, he is saying, samadukka sukha swastam samal oshtashma kanchana tulya priya apriyo dhira tulya nindastu nindalpa samstuti. Samadukka sukha same dukkha sukhe yasya samadukka sukha swastha se almani sthita samal oshtashma kanchana. Happiness and distress comes in life, able to deal with it with an equal mind, equanimity. That is only possible when one is established in the self. And this word, samaloshtashma kanchana, means he is able to see a piece of earth, a stone, and the gold all in the same way. What does it mean? Samaloshtashma kanchana. Explain that. Yeah. So here he says, tulya priya priyo dhira. Who is a dhira? Who is dhira? Krishna is saying that. Yeah. Dhi means knowledge of the self, first of all. Dhi means alpajnanam, knowledge of the self, right? Almani radihi, one who is, whose dhi, whose intelligence is absorbed in the self, and that is what is called a dhira. You remember, dehinospin yada dehe, kaumaram yuvanam chara tada dehandara praptir dhirastatrana mukhyadi. The word dhira means, normally the word dhira means one who is very courageous and able to face anything. That's what normal the word dhira means. But in Bhagavad Gita, word dhira Krishna is using in this spiritual context, what is spoken is that one who is established in the self. So dhirana means one who has knowledge of the self and one who is established in the self, right? His symptoms, Krishna is talking about it. His symptoms. One who is established in the self, it is his symptoms Krishna is talking about. Happiness and distress will come in life. And normally people, what happens when distress comes, people get upset and they get angry with others. And when they see people who are in a happy state, they will feel envy towards them. So they think that I am the only one who is in distress and others are all happy in this world. Why this has happened to me? In this way, we will think like that, right? And when happiness comes, they will get very excited about it. This is the normal nature among the people, right? So, what Krishna is saying is that if you give importance to sukham, happiness, too much, yeah, that is why when distress comes, you are losing the balance. Because you have given importance to sukham more, or you have given stress on sukham, when dukham comes, you lose your balance. You get affected by that, right? So, wherever you look in this world, there is dukham, there is sukham going on, right? And one should never think that the whole life will be sukham only. It will always be a mixture of both. Yeah. So sometimes people get carried away by sukham so much. Some people see the marriage in the movie. When they show marriages in the movie, everything looks very fantastic. How they were very happy after marriage. How they lived happily thereafter. Things like, and they go and get married after that. After seeing the marriage in the movie, they got affected by that, thinking that married life is really happening, happiness in life. And they go and get married after seeing the marriage in the movie. And then they realize that, what is film, what is cinema? Cinema is nothing but there is a hero, there is a heroine, and there is a villain. And this is how the cinemas are structured, cinema stories, right? So, and then like in the Bollywood movies, they will run around the tree, holding the hand together, right? And after that, are they happy after doing all that, right? So, in the same way, marriage creates some illusion in our mind in that way, that everything is going to be happy after that, yeah? And this is the reason, sometimes even when they talk Bhagavadam, they don't want to discuss Ekadasha Skandam. They want to finish with Rukmini's marriage to Krishna. Because they think that it is very auspicious to finish. Rukmini got married to Krishna and everything was happy after that. Ekadasha Skandam they won't discuss because Ekadasha Skandam will change your way of thinking. Right? So, so for Tattvabhid, one who knows the Tattvam, for him Sukham is also Dukham. Both he sees as problems. Yeah. Alma Sukham, one who has experienced that, he considers that as Sukham. Otherwise, nothing is Sukham, right? For us, what is Sukham? For us, Sukham is partying, singing, dancing, and all these things. This is our eating nicely. This is our Sukham, right? So, those who have experienced the happiness of spiritual life, none of these things, what we consider as sukham, is sukham for them. What we consider as sukham in mundane world is not sukham for them, those who have experienced the happiness of the soul. Yeah. So they are saying that that this sukham what we experience is like this. When you feel itchy, you scratch there and you feel some kind of a relief. In the same way, right? You cannot take it as sukham, right? Ranganatha Ananda, who was a head of Ramakrishna Mission, he used to say like this. He said, this sukham is like that. First excitement, and then exertion, and finally exhaustion. He used to put it in these three words. Ranganatha Ananda used to say like this. First, it is he gets excited with the sukham, and then he puts a lot of energy into it. He exerts himself a lot. And finally, he gets exhausted with that. Yeah. And why? Because he is exhausted and then tired and then fully become very exhausted. There is no shanti, in other words. So, this sukham dukham is a difference in degree only. If you look at it carefully, sukham dukham is difference in degree of how much you experience, right? Whereas Atma Sukham, what Krishna is talking about here, is Samadukha Sukha Swastham. He's saying here, Samadukha Sukha Swastham, he says. Sukham comes or Dukham comes, he will not be affected by that. Sukham or Dukham, he will stay in Swastham. He will stay in the self. When Sukham comes, he won't fall for that. When Dukham comes, he won't fall for that either. He will get a self situated in the self, in the Andaryami, in other words, right? So whether Sukham comes or happiness comes or distress comes, Dukham comes, he will not be carried away by that, by the waves of Sukham or Dukham, because he has understood what Sukham and Dukham means. Therefore, he will Swastham, Krishna says. Swastham means to be situated in the self. Swastham. Swastham. Yeah. So, And that's what he's saying here. Samadukha Sugha Swastham. Swastham, that's a word Krishna has used here. Swastham, being situated in the self. Sometimes people ask in a normal conversation, are you in the Swastada? Have you got Swastham? Are you in the Swastada? Is there, right? So, in order to become Swastham, you have to be situated in the self, in Swam. Swam means the self, right? If you are staying in the Prakriti, modes of nature, you cannot have Swastham. There won't be Swastham, right? So, if you are inside the Prakriti, Prakriti means three modes of nature. If you are within the Prakriti, you will get excited. Sometimes excitement may come, and after some time, depression will come. And nowadays, even young people get very depressed sometimes because of the pressure of work. And sometimes people hear Bhagavad Gita for that they want some peace inside, right? So if you ask the question, even at such a young age, why are you so disturbed? Because youth, one should be strong enough to deal with the world, right? But even at the youth, they feel very tension. And some young people are thinking to be stressed out like that is life, right? So there are certain diseases which are related to stress like that. And so they are the people because they have got these due to association with Prakriti, with association with Prakriti. So Prakritistam, one should not be Prakritistam, instead one should be Swastam. That's what that's saying. Samadukka Sukha Swastam, Samaloshtashma Kanchana. Prakritistam means one who is situated in the Prakriti. Swastam means one who is situated in the self. So, Samadukka Sukha Swastam. And if it is like that, what happens to him? Samaloshtashma Kanchana. If he is Swastam, he is Samaloshtashma Kanchana. In other words, for him, a piece of earth or a stone or gold, it's all the same to him. What does that mean? What Krishna is saying here is that he does not give importance in using any of them. He's not giving any importance to that. A story is there. There was a very wealthy landlord, or one who had a lot of land, and a wealthy zamindar, they used to call him, right? And he was very fond of satsangam. So what he used to do, he will invite a lot of sadhus to his house, and he will make big feast for them, and give them all a big feast, right? And after the bhiksha, after the feast is over, he will ask the sadhus to instruct him on spiritual matters. And they will give him different kinds of advice on spiritual life. He was very fond of spiritual life, but he had a lot of wealth also, so therefore he used to do it in this way, inviting everyone for a prasadam and feed them, and then after that he will have a satsangam with them, right? So, in one instance, he asked them, I have a great desire to see a Mahatma. I want to see a Mahatma. They were all sadhus who were there. And he told them, I want to see a Mahatma, who a Mahatma is. And if you can show me someone, I would like to go and meet him, he said. You are all great personalities, but I don't have the capacity to recognize a great personality, he said. I don't have the capacity to recognize a great personality. Put it like that, right? So what they did was, the people who had come, they told him that we will tell you about someone who is a great soul, and he if you go and see him, you will be impressed by his, you will recognize his greatness, he said. And they told him about a Mahatma somewhere else. So this person, this zamindar, or this landlord, what he did was, he went there and invited him for bhiksha on alone to come for a prasadam at home, right? And when he came, because they have all told him that he is a great Mahatma, our zamindar, he prepared very nice dishes and offered everything in golden bowl to him as a mark of respect towards him, right? And so when he offered in the golden bowl, he said to him, the guest, Mahatma told him, I don't want the golden bowl and all. I'm just happy in the banana leaf or any leaf, if you can offer it to me, he said. So, because there were a few others also, they were all given banana leaf. And this person alone was given the golden bowl. He said, I don't want it. Like everybody else, you give me the banana leaf, he said. Right? So, he offered the prasadam, they all ate, and everything was over. So he went to this Swamiji, who has come, and asked him that, I want to have vairagyam in my life. Can you tell me what I should do for that? So Swamiji's reply was, if I had the vairagyam, when you have invited me, I wouldn't have come. But I haven't got the vairagyam to teach you what vairagyam is, he said. Right? So I myself don't have any vairagyam. That is why I had come. As soon as you invited, I've come over straight away. Right? So so I haven't reached that state, he said. Which one? What Krishna is saying here? Samaloshtashma kanchana. The second line. Yeah? Samadukka sukha swastam. Samaloshtashma kanchana. I haven't even reached that state. So how can I teach you anything? What I haven't got, he said. Right? So that is the reason that when you gave me that golden bowl, I'm still finding the difference between the golden bowl and the banana leaf. I'm still able to find it because I haven't reached that state. Yeah. So what he did was, he said, I'll tell you about another Mahatma. You can go and see him to understand what vairagyam is, he said. So he gave him his name. And so after a few months, our landlord went up to him, to this person, and invited him for bicha, to come home, right? And he came, and they sat, all sat together. There were other people as well, right? And he gave him in a golden bowl to him, to this invited new Mahatma who had come, right? He didn't say anything, and he didn't say, I don't want golden bowl or anything like that. And everything was offered in golden bowl to him. The rest everybody else were given in the banana leaf or whatever leaf they have offered, right? They all ate everybody together, and after eating what you do normally, you fold the banana leaf and you go and put it in the waste paper basket, the bin outside. You bin it, isn't it? So this Mahatma, what he did, after he has eaten everything, he took his golden bowl and went and put it in the bin. Along with all the other people who have put the banana leaf in the bin. He has put his golden bowl also in the bin, right? So, and that is Samaloshtashma Kanchana. In other words, Dravyam, all these things, whatever it may be in this world, right? If you have common sense, right? You will know that none of them has any value. Whether it is gold or silver or iron or copper or anything else, wood or whatever it may be, they are ultimately matter. They are just matter only, is it not? It is we who give value to it. Gold we consider valuable because in the market it has value and in Vyavaharam it is beneficial. From spiritual position, gold has no meaning at all, no value at all, right? So, we give the value to the gold. Just like, that is called vanity. We feel vanity. Because we have a lot of gold, you are very rich. So society honors it. And society respects that. And you know that in Vyavaharam, you can do what you want if you have a lot of gold. Is it not? But from spiritual position, if you look at it, gold is of no use. No better than any piece of wood or any piece of stone. Nothing. So that's why. That's what Krishna is talking about. The realized person, He will not see matter anymore valuable. Matter has no effect at all on him. Matter cannot affect him anymore, just like it affects the ordinary person. Ordinary person gets quickly affected by gold, is it not? And gold has its own, that is why this whole world is running on this principle. So we give importance to gold, and therefore the golden bowl is important. But similarly, he is concerned, what he is saying, samaloshtashma kanchana. He is equal with everything, whether it's gold or whether it's a piece of stone or a piece of earth, whatever it may be, for him it's all the same at the end. Yeah. So, when you are giving importance to vyavaharam, when you give importance to vyavaharam, that is when all these things, we become materialists. We are not in the spiritual platform anymore. When you give importance to vyavaharam, we are not in the spiritual platform. We are vyavaharis. And therefore, because of that, when you give importance to vyavaharam and start seeing things, you're calling us samsari. They are samsari, right? So, in spiritual, from the spiritual practices, any sadhana what we do, whether we are progressing or not, is dependent on this one issue. That means from jadam, how far you are moving into atma. From jadam, this is all jadam, isn't it? Matter is jadam. From jadanishta, that is called jadilada, to get attached to jadam. From the jadilada, if you are becoming free, more and more free, it means that you don't want any of those things. From matter, attraction for matter is leaving us. That is a symptom of progress in the spiritual path. That's what Krishna is saying here. So, one after the other, he is able to, everything, one after the other, he is able to give up, right? To maximum extent, if one can simplify the life, to that extent he will be happy inside. So, whereas it is the, if you are fully this, all jadilada, with all kinds of matter, if one gets busy, and with all the karma kalabam, and you acquire a lot of things in this world, and after, you can see that with people, they buy and collect so many things, and then finding it difficult to get out of it after that, after accumulating things. So much things they have accumulated in life, and then they find it difficult to get out of it, right? So that is what he is saying here, Krishna is saying here, that this, what they call, they have created a palpavyuham around them because of accumulation. And if it is like that, tattva jnanam won't stay with him. You see, this is the problem. They will hear Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, but nothing will stay in the head. It will leave them. They will hear, it will go. Because they are caught up in this web, karma kalapam. And this jadilada comes to them. That is what he is saying here. Krishna is saying here. Samadukha sukha swastham samaloshtashma kanchana. If he has that state of mind, then he will immediately pick up the tattvam easily. Right? So, any amount of studying Bhagavad Gita will not help him. One who has fallen into this situation. Right? Vyavaharam, practical difficulties will come to him. And that is why it will come to him. Everybody has to go through this, right? That is why Krishna is saying here that little by little withdraw from the mind. Little by little withdraw from the mind, and little by little different withdraw from the body first. Little by little withdraw from the body, and whatever you feel that is excess in necessary for a body, leave it. Only accept what is necessary for the body. And what you need for your body, that everybody is justified to have it. As far as bodily necessities are concerned, one is entitled to have this in this world. For example, they say, if you are hungry, You are entitled for food. Yeah? And even if you steal the food, it is not considered to be thieving. That is how Bhagavatam says that. If you are hungry, you are justified in going and eating, taking food from anywhere. Even if you steal, it's not considered to be wrong. Yeah? So, from material platform, mundane platform, stealing is considered to be a fall, wrong thing to do. But suppose somebody is hungry and he has stolen food, it is not considered to be sinful. Because we say that all the gold what I have in the locker, in the bank, or the bank deposits, we say it's all ours, right? As far as Krishna is concerned, from Krishna's position, right, everyone in this world has enough food to eat and clothes to wear, and that much freedom Krishna has given to everybody. He is allowed to take it from the earth, from Mother Earth. Food, what he needs, and the clothes to wear, right? So, anybody can have got that freedom. If he has got hungry, he has the right to eat. In Bhagavatam it says, Sarvam Achyuta Narmidam. In the seventh canto you will find that word. Sarvam Achyuta Narmidam. So if you can live like that, that is a question, is it not? Able to accept only the very bare minimum, what is necessary for our survival in this world. So, to bring that in practice, there is a problem. Practical life, right? Because this has to be decided only not by one person. Whole society has to decide. Whole world has to agree with this, is it not? With this principle. Otherwise it's very difficult, right? So, but everybody won't agree with this. This is where the problem comes, right? What to talk about everybody? Even the ashram, it doesn't happen together. Even in the ashram, between the brahmacharis and the sannyasis, they don't agree on these things. And samaloshtashma kanchana, what Krishna said, it is easy to say that, but when it comes to practice, we have a problem, right? And in the material world, you can see some temples get so rich with the gold and cash and everything, right? So, if a lot of cash comes, you know what the temple management does? They buy gold and they cover the deity room with the gold, the deities with the gold, as much as possible gold, 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 gold everywhere. This is what happens, right? So, and so this is the nature of people, that attachment won't go away. Even among the temple management, this attachment will come, right? So Krishna saying here, Krishna is not agreeable with that. Tulya priya apriyo dhiraha, tulya ninda alpa samstuti, he is saying, right? So, whether you like it or not, something you like, something you don't like, you have to keep that balance inside. Not pulled by anything, right? Whether though gold comes or gold doesn't come, it doesn't matter. But it should not, you get attached to gold and start thinking the gold has required. Deities, whether you cover with gold or whether you cover with sandalwood, it doesn't make any difference to the deity. But in our mind, because of our attachment to the gold, we think the deity should have the gold. And we start covering everything with the gold, right? So, in the same way, just like samaloshtashma kanchana, one who has that equanimity towards the stone as well as the gold, in the same way, Krishna is saying, tulya priya apriyo dhiraha. So, one who is praising you, or one whom you like, and one who you don't like, or one who is insulting you, able to deal with them in the same way, right? Whether you praise him, or whether you insult him, he is not tulya ananda alpa samstuti, right? He is not one who gets affected by that. Whether you glorify him, that means if you praise him, he gets affected. And if you insult him, he gets offended by that. Yeah. So, even a small thing spoken, he gets upset, right? That is the nature in this world with people. But after some time, one who has done proper anusandhanam about these things, one has to learn, they say, give this example. You know the cat, small cats, if you take them and you throw them in the air to the top, whichever way you throw, they'll come and land on the four legs. The cats have got that capacity. Children play with the cat like that. They take the cat kittens and throw them to higher level, they throw it up. But no matter which way you throw, they'll come and land on the four legs. They have that capacity to do that, right? So Krishna is saying like that, right? After all, you are offending or insulting my body, is it not? And so let them do that. And similarly, abhimanam, pride also is based on the body. Insult is also to the body, pride is also based on the body. So if one is able to do that, Krishna is saying, if he is able to do all these things, then you will be able to perform self-inquiry or the knowledge of the self. It is become a lot easier if he has that frame of mind. Yeah, he has offended me. Who is me? Right? One who gets happy when he is praised, and one who gets disturbed when he is offended. That's not an ideal situation. Krishna is saying like that. There are stories to explain these things, what Krishna is saying, right? Once it so happened, Yama Dharma Raja, Yama, comes at the end when we leave this world, isn't it? He takes us away, he sends his people, and he drags the soul from here, from this body, and the jiva has to go with him, right? So, one person, he was a sculptor. He makes sculptures, right? So what he did was, he found a way to get out of this. He said, I will beat Yama, he decided. What he did was, Yama Dharma Raja has got an accountant. His name is Chitragupta. He keeps the accounts for Yama Dharma. All our accounts are with him, Chitragupta. So, Chitragupta, this accountant of Yama, this sculptor, one who makes the sculptures, he took to his worship. He started worshipping Chitragupta. He worshipped him very intensely. So one day Chitragupta appeared in front of him and asked him, what do you want from me? He said, could you tell me the exact date when I have to die? Because he has got all the accounts. Based on our Prarabdham, when it's finished, we have to leave this world. That somebody must have an account, otherwise how is it happening? So Chitragupta knew when he has to die, and he gave him the date when he has to die, right? So this man who is a sculptor, who makes sculptures, he decided he is going to do something about it, because he knew the date when he is to die. And so that day the Yamadudas will come. So what he did was, he made about 50 sculptures exactly like him. He made them. 50 of them, one after next to each other, and put them there, and somewhere in the middle he went and sat there in the middle of that, and the sculptures were exactly like him. So it was very difficult to recognize who is this person is. If you look at them, they all same, looks the same thing, right? So the Yamadudas came, and they came with the rope, and they couldn't figure out who is the one whom they have to take him away, take him from there. So they looked at all the sculptures, and they went and told Yama that we are finding it difficult, because there are 50 of them sitting there, and we don't know who you are given this order to bring him back, and we couldn't find it. The work was so perfect, it was done, right? So Yama thought about it. He says, I'll come myself to see, make the decision who it is, right? So Yama knew very well what is to be done. Yeah. So he came there, And he looked at all the sculptures and he told them that I have never seen anybody with such a capacity or skill to make sculptures like this. And glorified the sculptor so much, the man who has made them. He glorified him so much. And when the glorification happened, the sculpture was in the middle, he got affected by that straight away. And he came out with that, right? So, he said, Yama said that, I have seen many people, I have never seen one like this, he said. And to such a perfection to make these sculptures. And when he said that, immediately that sculpture man who actually made it, he smiled. Because he was felt that happiness inside, right? So, this is our nature in this world. Everybody likes to be glorified. And when it glorifies in a subtle level, they are enjoying that glorification. Yeah. So, and similarly, just like glorification brings happiness, the other way also. Insult also brings suffering, right? So, Krishna is saying there that the, and that is what in the Bhagavatam, and also this word is used, ekadeshiya satta, that's the word for that, yeah? Then this vikalpam coming like this, ekadeshiya satta, so that is present in the body and the mind, yeah? That it is because of that I am this body, I am the mind, because of that is what's called ekadeshiya satta. It is due to that, and it is very deep rooted inside us, that I am this body and the mind, right? In other words, somebody glorifies you, you feel, praises you, you feel happy. Someone insults you, you feel disturbed. In other words, what that means is, avidya is still there inside. Avidya is not gone. It is a symptom of that. When you get praised, you glorified, you feel happy. Or when you get insulted, you feel unhappy, offended. If that feeling is still there, it means that the avidya has not gone. Avidya is still there, right? So, therefore, that is why Krishna is saying that again and again, you have to come back to your own swastha, to the surupasthiti, right? So, and this is only possible by practicing what Krishna has spoken here. They are called, all the problems in dealing with that is called andaraya. Andaraya means the obstacles that come in practicing this, right? How to win over this andaraya means these obstacles, and to establish in the Atma, Atmanishtha. Unless one is in the Atmanishtha, only then you can become free from stuti or ninda, or praise or insult. If one has to become free from praise or insult, the only way it can happen is if he is established in the Andaryami, establishing the self, right? So, that means one has to come to this consciousness that my swarupam has to leave that thing called personality. Personality is our problem now. We are to deal with this personality. We have become personality, and personality, that identification, has to completely leave us, right? And there are examples about that also. People who have become free from personality. Personality causes all these problems. When, as long as you have personality, when somebody praises you, you will feel happy. When somebody insults you, you will feel offended. But to become free from that, the personality itself has to go. Somebody wrote a book, and about Ramana Maharshi, and brought it to him, thinking that Maharshi will like it. And in that book he wrote a lot of things about Maharshi, things which are not even 100% true, glorifying him. We felt that he should glorify him. So he wrote all these things and brought it to him. And then the book was printed and distributed to other people, first edition, second edition, all that things happened after that. Yeah. Then somebody gave a book, copy of that book, to Kunjaswami also. Kunjaswami read the book and he said that a lot of these things what's written in the book is not true. In the book he has written that Maharshi got married, he had children and things like that. Someone felt like that, doing that. And so Kunjaswami took the book and read it, and Kunjaswami went to Ramana Maharshi and gave the book to Ramana Maharshi and told him that this book what has been written, please have a look at it, he said. Ravana Maharshi took the book, read it, and then what he did was, wherever there was some spelling mistakes and all in the book, he corrected all that and he gave it back. He was not interested in what was written about it, right? So Kunjaswami kept saying to Ravana Maharshi that, is this all what is written in the book true? Maharshi's answer was like this. Maharshi says to him that, what is wrong in that? He said. So Kunjaswami said, these things are wrong. So Maharshi says, the rest of it, is it all true? He said. Is everything else true in the book? So in other words, what Maharshi is saying is, you are writing so many things based on your mind. What meaning has it got? What value has it got? He's saying. That was his approach, right? In other words, that as far as Maharshi is concerned, everything is false here. Nothing in the body itself is not real. And you are writing about the body. And the same thing with the mind. You are writing about the mind. So, self-realized person or one who is in the platform of the self, he will see things differently, not like the way we think. We will take something is right and wrong if it is written in the books, just like history. History, you read history, you study history. Can you believe that all the history what is written is true in this world? Everybody projects the history according to their mind. It's not. According to their mind. So sometimes it is, people you can observe this, right? That colonialism. Colonialism is seen from the countries who are colonized, they see in one way. But the countries who have colonized the countries, they think that they have done a lot of good to them. So what are you supposed to do? Who is right now? The countries who have gone and colonized, they are thinking, we have civilized them, we have made them civilized, we gave them knowledge, we gave them democracy, we gave them parliament, and we taught them the language, we gave them railway lines and things like that. So that is from there coming from. But the countries who got colonized, they think you exploited us, you took all the wealth from here. That's different perception it is. So histories are written on this basis, everything. All the histories are written like this. Similarly about the World War, 1, 2, all the World War, if you read the history, you will get one-sided view of that. The other side also, you have to look what they have to say, who got beaten in the, defeated in the war. If you ask them, they will have another story to say about it. Very difficult to accept anything in this world as truth. So, self-realized person who has gone beyond all these things, he will not give any value to history, nor to any books what you have written about it, because all of them, as he is concerned, that E.T., you are falling away from the truth. Parasvabhava karmani yaprashamsadiya nindadi asu brashade swartha asatyam abhiniveshada. What Krishna said in the Bhagavatam, that is what it is. Parasvabhava karmani yaprashamsadiya nindadi. He says, whoever does that, he has already fallen away from the truth. So, spiritual realization have a different perception of things. They come from a different position. Yeah. So, ashubhrashyade swarthal asatyam abhiniveshada, because he has fallen into the plane of untruth. Asatyam abhiniveshada. Yeah. So, that is what Krishna is saying here. Yeah. And being established in the self is important. Or Gunadhidan is the one who has transcended these three modes and gone above than that. Yeah. So, Tulya Priya Priyo Dhiraha Tulya Ninda Alpa Samstuti. Yeah. Ninda Alpa Samstuti. then he is saying that next verse also. Manaba Manayos Tulyam Tulyo Mitrari Pakshayoho Sarva Arambha Parityagi Gunati Dasa Uchyate. These are all the nature of a Gunatitan, one who has transcended the three modes. Yeah. Manaba Manayom Tulyam Samo Nurvigaraha Tulyo Mitrari Pakshayoho Yadivi Udasina Bhavandihi Kejir Swabi Prayana Tadhavi Paravi Prayana Mitrari Pakshayoho Iva Bhavandi. Manam Apamanam, praise and insult, he is equal and not affected by anything, and he will behave equally with friends and the enemies, and For others, it may appear as though he is siding with one person, right? But he will maintain his balance inside, right? Whether you give him trouble or if you worship him, because he is not affected by that, he is in the liberated state. Therefore, manam, apamanam, all equal, right? Mitram Shatru, friend and enemy is not there, and he won't take sides with anyone, equal to both, right? Also, what else he does? All Sarva Aramba Parityagi, he says. He won't endeavor anything to do in this world, new things, right? And he will not look for recognition in the world. He doesn't want to be recognized in this world, right? And he won't also work for achieving something in this world. He has become free from all that. And Krishna says that even after leaving the body to go to heaven and things like that, even that desire he has given up, even to that extent, right? Not only that he doesn't want anything in this world, even after death going to heavenly planets or living in a higher plane, even that desire he has given up. So that's what he's saying, that sarvarambha parityagi. Sarvarambha parityagi gunatitasam uchyate. And he is the one who is gunatitan, he says. One who has gone beyond the three modes of nature. These are all symptoms of a person who have gone beyond the three modes of nature. So, sarvarambha parityagi means that the doing something, seeing the results that can come from that, and sometimes the results may not come. So, arambham, except for maintaining the body what is required, he won't do anything else. He won't do anything else except for what is required for maintaining the body. So, sarvarambha parityagi is gunatidan. Krishna began with this, udasinava dasinam, that verse 23. From udasinava dasinam, right up to the end of this verse, these three verses. Udasinava dasinam gunaryo na vijayade, gunavartanda mityeva yo avadishtadi nengade. Samadukha sukha swastam samaloshtashma kanchana tulya priyad priyodhira tulya ninda atma samspradi. And then finally Krishna concludes this. Manava manayo sulyam tulyo mitrari pakshayoho sarvarambha parityagi gunadita samuchyade. So these three verses is what Krishna is saying of a person who has become free from the three modes of nature. If you study these three verses, 23, 24 and 25, those three verses are the symptoms of a person who have come out of the three modes of nature. Yeah. Then, in the last two verses, Krishna is saying, how can one transcend the three modes? How can one become free from the three modes? That's what he's going to say. These two verses. Mamchayo avyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samaditidan brahma bhuyaya kalpade. One. Then, brahmanohi pradishtaham amrutasya avyasya shashvatasya dharmasya sugasya gandhikasya. These two verses are talking about the process of transcending the three modes of nature. So, first of all, let's look at the verse 26. Mamchayo avyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate. Bhakti is two types, basically. One, vyabhichari bhakti. And here Krishna is talking about avyabhicharini bhakti. Yeah? Avyabhicharini bhakti means that, for example, in Bhagavadam, Pingala is spoken, one of the 24 spiritual masters, right? This Pingala had many relationship with many people, many men. She was Vyabhichari, right? Vyabhicharini. Yeah. And one day, by Dattatreya Maharshi's mercy, she developed vairagyam. Oh, Pingala, developed vairagyam, right? Nirvedam says there in the Bhagavadam, you will see that mentioned, Nirvedam. She left the, gave up everything, and she attention turned inwards. Till then she was busy in the world with other people, but suddenly she gave up everything and went inwards, right? And there's a famous word, Sandam Samibe Ramanam Samibe Tuham Ramana Pradam Itta Pradam, that famous verse there, right? So, what he's saying here is that Akamadam, she's saying there, that the I have given up everything and I have taken shelter of that Antaryami inside, Krishna inside, who is inside, right? And I realized one thing, that everything outside is dukkham, shogam, amayam, vyadhi, adhi. Pingala says that, right? It is, everything in the world outside is connected with these things, mixed with these things. Therefore, I have left everything, right? And she says, I have taken Antaryami's shelter and I have become happy in that way. So, that is Pingala's words in the Bhagavadam, right? So, therefore I am happy now, Pingala says, and then says, I walk in this world carrying that Antaryami, Ramanam, inside and nothing outside. And Alma, she has realized that what Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita, Gadi, Bharta, Prabhu, Sakshi, Nivasa, Sharanam, Sukhrut, Prabhavam, Pralayasthanam, Nidhanam, Bijam, Avyayam. That Antaryami is the shelter of everything, right? In this way, she got established in the self. In her realization, she says that, right? In other words, she got into the samadhi state. That was due to Dattatreya Maharshi's special mercy. What happened, right? And then it says there, Sukham Sushuabhi Pingala. Pingala went to sleep after that. Pingala was having a very restless evening. A lot of people had come, but they were all not willing to pay her as much she wanted. And therefore they were all left. And then by Dattatreya Maharshi, she came that way on that evening. And he sat there in front of her house. Pingala went and had a conversation with her. So Pingala asked her, when will you leave? Dattatreya Maharshi's answer was very good. He said to her, when the sun rises, I'll leave. He said, because it was too dark in the night, nowhere to go. When the sun rises, I will leave. What he meant was, when Pingala gets the spiritual message in, Pingala's heart changes. That is what he meant. Pingala didn't understand that. The Dattatreya Maharshi knew that Pingala is living in the wrong way. And he felt compassion for Pingala, seeing her situation. And he said to her, when the sun rises, I will go, he said. So Pingala allowed him to rest there, outside her house, whatever gate or whatever it was. So he stayed there. And in the morning, when Dattatreya Maharshi left, by then Pingala has woken up from her avidya. She has come out to her senses. And she started thinking, I was born in this great place, Mithila, where Sita Devi has born. King Janaka has ruled here. Sita Devi is Brahmavidya. And in a place like that, look at my life. What an abominable life I am leading. All these thoughts came to her. In other words, her whole attention turned inwards. And he took shelter of the Antaryami, Krishna inside, and changed her life completely. And after that, Bhagavadam says, she slept very well. Sukham Sushwabhi Pingala. Which means that she was in the state of realized state, right? So, that bhakti, what Pingala experienced, that is avyabhijarini bhakti. Without expectation, anything in return, able to become completely detached from this world and totally taking shelter of the Antaryami the way she has done. She was a Vyabhicharini, but her bhakti was a Vyabhicharini. That's the interesting part. That's why Pingala is quoted in this instance. She is a Vyabhicharini. She was, right? But the bhakti what she had was a Vyabhicharini bhakti. Without any purpose, self-realization alone, she felt shelter in that and took shelter completely, right? So, if you get bhakti inspired by something outside, anything from outside, that is Vyabhicharam bhakti. Bhakti Vyabhicharam, right? In other words, separately from Antaryami inside, right? Whatever association you have with the world outside, and you get some benefit from that, and then bhakti develops from that, then bhakti will not stay. One day it will leave you, right? For example, if you worship anything separately from Antaryami, seeing something separately from Antaryami, any form or any person, anything, if you worship, that one day it will leave you. You have to leave or the object will leave you, right? So that is why in the Narada Bhakti Sutram, Shandilya, Narada Bhakti Sutram is like this. He has quoted all the Rishis there. Narada Maharshi gives his own words. He has quoted Vedavyas also. He has also quoted Shandilya Maharshi. So Shandilya Maharshi says there that in the Narada Bhakti Sutram that Almaredi Avirodhena Shandilyaha says Narada Maharshi about Narada Maharshi says about Shandilya Maharshi. Right? What he is saying is Almaredi Avirodhena Shandilyaha. It means that the any sadhana, what we do in this world, any sadhana, right, whether it is deity worship or chanting the holy name, meditation, whatever it may be, all of them you may do it, but it should be done in such a way that it does not become an obstacle in realizing the truth, Antaryami inside. Antaryami realization is more important. Yeah. So, and if you have developed bhakti without taking into account Antaryami, it will not stay. It will not stay. It will not be Almaradhi. It will not be Almaradhi. So, and that is what Narada Bhakti Sutram says. Yeah. So, Almaradhi Avirodhena Shandilya. Shandilya Maharshi says this in the Narada Bhakti Sutram. So, in other words, what Krishna is saying here is that, so see this avyabhicharini bhakti, what he is talking about. Mamchayo avyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate. Krishna has put that stress on that word, avyabhicharena. Avyabhicharena means that you execute your bhakti in such a way that you don't lose that almarathi, right? And if vichitti comes, vichitti means that state of realization of the, if it breaks up, the self-realization state, if it breaks up, right, again and again, by our effort, we should try to go to that state, because that is the proper bhakti what Krishna is referring to. Krishna's definition of bhakti is also very different than the way we see it, right? So in Narada Bhakti Sutram, Narada Maharshi quotes Shandilya Maharshi and says this very strongly on that. If vichitti comes, vichitti means if it breaks up that self-realized state, then tadarpidaha tadagilacharaha, and that al-smriti, all karmam should be performed with this understanding. Vismarane parma vyaguladaha, when swarupa vismriti happens, that means if you fall away from that self-state, then he becomes, tremendous anxiety comes to him. So, and he has to try for Swarupa Smriti again. Swarupa Smriti is more important, right? So, and that bhakti, with Swarupa Smriti, Krishna calls it as Avyabhicharini bhakti. Without Swarupa Smriti, if you execute bhakti, bhakti has different levels, isn't it? Satyika Rajasa Namasa Bhakti, all we talk about. This Swarupa Smriti is Nirguna Bhakti. It's beyond the three. Satyika Rajasa Tamasam, what Kabila Maharshi has spoken in the Kabilam, We have read that, discussed that before. So it is based on Satvika Rajasa Tamasam. Then on the similar lines, it is talked about Uttamam, Madhyamam, Athamam, Bhakti in the Ekadasham also. Navayogi Sambhadam, where you will see this. Yeah. So Bhagavatam is trying to teach Bhakti's different levels of Bhakti. Satvika Rajasa Tamasam, Uttamam, Athamam, Madhyamam. In these three levels, Bhakti is spoken normally. But Nirguna Bhakti, what Kapila Maharshi is saying, what Krishna is saying here is, this Swarupa Smriti, being situated on the platform of Antaryami, realizing who I am. And the bhakti that you execute after self-realization, that is bhakti. Krishna calls that as bhakti. After self-realization, what happens? That bhakti, what happens to a self-realized soul, is the proper bhakti, which is called, in other words, as parabhakti. Parabhakti, nirguna bhakti, all refers to the same thing. All refers to the same thing. You can see this easily, that some people say like this. This is all in the early stages, yes? Early stages of bhakti. They will say like this, you only have to worship Krishna, nobody else. I have bhakti only towards Krishna, everybody else I am not interested. I don't want to surrender to anybody else. I just want to surrender to Krishna, nobody else, like that. So, that is not avyabhicharini bhakti. You got to understand this, because it's a little bit complex things, right? So, when you say like that, what it means is, you have a form in your mind. It is that form based that you are saying that you have bhakti is for Krishna, right? So, but from Krishna's position, if you look at it, Krishna is the soul of everybody, Antaryami of everyone, is it not? Krishna prefers to be addressed in that way rather than in that form, right? So, that is why Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita, Aham alma gudakesha sarva bhudashayastida aham adhyanja madhyanja bhudanam andamevacha. Why did he say like that? He is defining, Krishna is defining himself who he is. Aham alma gudakesha, I am the soul of everyone. So, when you talk about, so practically whole creation is Krishna only. And everything is Krishna Swarupam. In other words, the Chaitanyam or living force, what you find in this creation is Krishna. And if you are able to see Krishna like that, as Atma, soul of everyone, only then, only if you are able to see it like that, you will be able to see Krishna in everybody. Otherwise, you won't be able to see him in that way. Only if you accept that Krishna is the soul of everyone, Aham Atma Gudakesha, only if you accept it that way, you will be able to see him present in everybody. Right? So, Mamchayo Avyabhicharena Bhakti Yogena Sevate Sa Gunan Samadhi Teidan Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpade. That's Krishna's explanation to that. He's saying here that one who is practicing this, and he is the one serving me through the Bhakti Yoga process, right? So, these three modes of nature, they are present in our mind, right? So, one who has practiced to be able to be situated in the platform of the self, Antaryami, he is saying, who has practiced, Samadhi Teidan, who has practiced that equality. Equanimity means what? Samam means Krishna. Presence of Krishna in everyone, that is what Krishna calls it as bhakti. Seeing Krishna's presence in everyone equally, he is the one who has got bhakti, Krishna says. And such a person, what Krishna says? Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpade. He will become Brahma Bhudam. He will become Brahma Bhudam. Right. So, Alma is Brahma Swarupam, and at the moment for us, we are seeing Atma, we are perceiving ourselves as Jiva, Jivatma, right? And if we practice that from Jivatma, how to move it towards the Antaryami, that practice, yeah? And if that Anusandhanam happens, ultimately Antaryami will reveal to ourselves, to everybody, that is our original nature, not that Jiva Bhavam. Jiva Bhavam, right?
Tasseva Atma Vivrade Tanam Swam. He will reveal himself, Kathopanishad says, right? And when he does that, we will know that it is Krishna who is inside as a Sandaryami. We'll come to that. And that Krishna says that he has become, he has transcended the three modes of nature at that stage, yeah? And that is when, that when you realize that Krishna is present inside as the Andaryami and he is your very self, and when you come to that realization state, that time you can say that you have become free from the three modes of nature. You see? And our aham, that aham what Krishna is talking about, aham aham, which is present in all of us, right? And it is that aham is Brahmam. And that is the next verse. Look at the next verse, right? So, in this 20, the last but one verse, 26th verse, Krishna said that, Mamchayo avyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevade sagunan samadhi tedan brahmabhuyaya kalpade. Krishna says that, through avyabhicharani bhakti who serves me, he transcends the three modes of nature and he becomes Brahmam. So, whether you are a sannyasi or whether you are doing karmam, whoever it may be, one who realizes that Krishna is present in everyone as the Andaryami, and one who worships that Andaryami as Krishna, he is the one qualified for realizing Aham Brahmasmi. Ajahn Swami has commented on that, right? Or ready for liberation, in other words. Saguna and Samadhi Teidan. Every word you have to take care carefully. Saguna and Samadhi Teidan. Gunam, three modes of nature. Samam means seeing the one present in everybody. Samadhi Teidan. He is ready for Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpade. To be realized for Aham Brahmasmi stage. Yeah? After how that will happen is the next verse. Yeah? Brahmanohi Pradishtaham. Amrdasya Avyasya Cha. Shashvatasya Cha Dharmasya. Sugasya Egandigasya Cha. Next verse. Yeah? So, Brahman is known to us, in us, as aham. I am, I am, I am. Awareness, bodham. That is Brahman. That bodham, awareness inside us, that we exist, I am, I am, I am. That existence is Brahman, right? So, Jnani will call it as aham when he is saying that aham. As Brahman, he is speaking like that. Yeah. So when they say aham, aham is that beauty of the word aham is this, that Krishna has used that word aham freely in the Bhagavad Gita, so many places, right? When Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita aham, he is not referring to Krishna as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. He is saying that as the soul of everyone. Aham Atma Guda Kesha, there. Many other places also. Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Matap Sarvam Pravartade. What does that aham means? That Andaryami present in everybody. So many places you can see that word. Krishna uses the word aham. When he says aham, it doesn't mean he as a son of Vasudeva and Devaki. That's not what he is referring to. It's easy to understand, it's not difficult. Krishna is referring to that aham means Krishna who is present in everyone as the Andaryami. It is from that state he is speaking that. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matta sarvam pravartade idi matva bhajandema buddha bhava samanyida. Aham atma gudagesha sarva bhudashaya sthida aham adyancha madyancha bhudanam antamevacha. Lot of other verses as well you will see. Yeah. So when aham, when Krishna says aham, he is referring to this Andaryami's position, he is speaking from that, right? And that includes, of course it includes Vasudeva and Devaki and Krishna, it's also aham. as well as Arjuna, as well as all the other people who are present in the battlefield. All of them, Krishna is present as Aham, right? And that's why he said to, in the Vibhuti Yogam, Pandavanam Dhananjaya, he said. Among the Pandavas, I am Arjuna, he said. So, keeping this in the mind, right? And Vibhuti Yogam, right? So, and Krishna also said, Belam Belavadam Chaham, Kamarago Vivarjidam, Dharma Aviruddha Bodeshu Kamosmi Bharadarshapa. Again, he's saying there, Aham, Belam Belavadam Chaham, Aham. And Brahmanohi Pratishtaham, here Krishna is saying here. Brahmanohi Pratishtaham, Amrutasya Avyayasya cha. So, what it means is, Brahmam, when we say Brahmam, Brahmam's Pratishta, where is Brahmam? Pratishta means where it is installed. Brahmam is present in all of us, is installed in all of us. The place where he is installed is Aham. That Bodham, awareness inside us, that is Aham and that is nothing but Brahmam. Brahmam is present in everyone as Aham, awareness, Bodham, and that is his Pratishta. Pratishta means he is installed. Pratishta means installation. So Brahmam is installed in all of us. Pratishta is Aham. Brahmam present in everyone is Aham. Right? So Krishna is saying there, sometimes we call it as Pratyagalpa, right? And if you realize that Antaryami inside, only then, only if you know him in that way, you can know Brahmam, right? So how is Brahmam present in all of us? As Antaryami, right? So Antaryami is our consciousness, is it not? Otherwise, if you keep saying Brahmam, Brahmam, it's just a meaning, nothing means much from that. How will you know that? Upanishad says what Brahmam is, right? It's a word. But how will you know that? You have to realize him as Antaryami inside. That is why that famous statement in the Upanishad, Pratyanam Brahmam. Pratyanam Brahmam. Bodham. That Pratya inside is Brahmam. Pratyanam Brahmam, right? So, how will you know that? Aham Brahmam. Aham Brahma, right? Aham, that is Brahmam. That Aham Brahmasmi, as they say. Yeah. So, Samvedyam, so Prakasham, and Aham Brahmanaha. So, up to that time, he says, I am the shelter, that Aham is a shelter for liberation. That's what he's saying here. Brahmanohi Pratishtaham Amrutasya Avyayasya cha. What is that? Amrutasya Avyayasya cha means? Amrutasya means liberated state. That's Amrutasya. Liberated state. Avyayasya cha means permanently. Never to fall from that. Avyayasya cha, right? So, one who has taken my shelter, Shashvata Dharmam and Moksham, or I am the Ashrayam, he is saying there. Yeah? Brahmanohi Pratishtagam Amrutasya Avyayasya cha. One who has realized me in that way, he is qualified for that realization, Aham Brahmasmi, right? And Amrutha Swabhavam, Paramananda Purnam, Paramatma, I am the seed of the Pratyagalpa. That means this experience inside as Aham Brahmasmi is Paramatma realization. Of the Paramatma experience like that, right? So, keeping that, that is why this verse in the same thing in Viveka Chudamani also says that the Prakriti Vikriti Bhinnam Shuddha Bodha Subhavam Sadasad Sadasadidam Ashesham ഭാവയൽ നിർവിശേഷം വിലസതി പരമാത്മ ജാഗ്രതാദി അവസ്ഥ സ്വഹം അഹം ഇതി സാക്ഷാൽ സാക്ഷി രൂപേണ ബുദ്ധേ. That verse is reflecting exactly this verse, what Krishna has spoken here, right? So, Paramatma is just a sakshi of everything. It's a witness to everything. Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti, in all the three states, he remains aloof from everything, unaffected by the three states. Who? Antaryami, Bodham, awareness, right? And he is the Atma Swarup. He is the Atma. Who? This Antaryami, who is not affected by Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti. And he, when he gets to know that he is the Paramatma, Shashwatam, Shashwatasya cha Dharmasya, Krishna is saying there, then you have understood what Shashwata Dharma means. Shashwata Dharma. It's another complicated word, Shashwata Dharma. In the 11th chapter, Arjuna was addressing Krishna as Shashwata Dharma Gopta Sanadhanastam Purusho Matomi. What is this Shashwata Dharma? Normally there is a lot of dharma in this world. Sanadhana Dharma we say. Sanadhana Dharma actually refers to the Shashwata Dharma. But Varna Dharma is there, Ashrama Dharma is there, Sri Dharma, Purusha Dharma, different types of dharma is there. But out of all these, Shashwata Dharma means that dharma which is eternal, which can never change. Which can never change. You can't change it. That's the beauty of that. Yeah. So that Shashwata Dharma, what Krishna is talking about. And here he is saying that if you have to know that Shashwata Dharma, Amrutasya Avyayasya, Shashwatasya Dharmasya Sugasya Gandhi. For that you have to have Amrutasya Avyayasya. Amrutasya Avyayasya. Right. So, if in order to know this Shashwata Dharma, you have to have this Amrutasya Avyayasya, right? That means when you realize Antaryami as the self, that is when you have got the Shashwata Dharma. Shashwata Dharma. Everything else is, in other words, when you realize you are not the body, you are that Antaryami inside, that is what is called Shashwata Dharma. Shashwata Dharma, right? Everything else is Vyavahara Dharma. Dharma means Vyavaharam. We all talk about what we discuss in this world mostly is Vyavahara Dharma. It's not. So, just like if you drive on the road, that they say you have to keep driving, keep left, they say, while driving, right? That's a Vyavahara Dharma. If you go to another country, they will say keep right. So, different places according to that. So, according to that changes from place to place. That's Vyavahara Dharma, right? Similarly, if I keep saying that I will only drive in the left wherever I go, that won't work. Because Vyavahara Dharma is different in different places. And and therefore it is called a Loka Dharma, right? Therefore in Bhagavadam, it says that if you want to be established in the self, you have to become free from Loka Dharma. These are all Loka Dharma. So many Loka Dharma we have. Unless you become free from Loka Dharma, you cannot be established in the Atma Dharma, in the establishment. So Atma Nishta, established in the self. And as much as we get established in the Atma Dharma, then we will, Krishna, what Krishna is saying is this, Shashwatattam, Shashwata Dharma, you will understand what it means. Till we realize the self and get established in the self, the Shashwata Dharma will not be known, what it means, right? Because this Dharma is present in everyone. Once you see the Upadhi, that means the body, the mind, everything, the problems will come to us. We'll have problems, right? But once you, that's what creates, you like somebody, you hate someone. That's all coming from that bodily from the Upadhi, right? But Shashwata Dharma, what is that? Shashwata Dharma, one who has come to that, he has completely broken away from the world, totally broken away from the world. And he does not have any speciality with anything in this world, and no sangam, attachment to anything, everything has become same to him. He is in that shanti state. So, when Krishna is talking about this sannyasi in the Bhagavad Gita, he always mentions this, that he does not refer to a sannyasi as one who, you saw that in the 18th chapter, Moksha Sannyasa Yogam. Krishna's definition of sannyasam is not the sannyasam what we people are talking about. We think about sannyasam, one who had sannyasa diksha, he has taken from someone, and he has got a danda, and he has got saffron clothes, and he has got a name, sannyasi's name and all. That is Krishna's eyes, it is not considered sannyasam. Krishna is saying that when he is talking about sannyasi, he is talking about someone who is a Shashwata Dharma Gopta, one who has reached the state of self-realization. Him Krishna calls a sannyasi, right? So, in other words, in the middle of everything, without hating anything, without getting attached to anything, not particular, yadrcha lava sandrishto, as Krishna mentioned before, he is situated, yona dveshti na kamkshadi, yona krishadi na dveshti, right? So, that all Krishna has defined that before, and in middle of everything, able to remain like that, in that state, he is a sannyasi, he says. And whatever it may be, whether he is in the householder life, or whether he is in the brahmachari life, vanaprastha life, doesn't matter, he is a sannyasi, Krishna says. If his state of consciousness is like that, right? And such a person, based on Bhagavad Gita, he is a sannyasi, he is a jivan mukta, he is a gunatita, and then he is saying here, that sukha segandiga secha, that he has become Brahmam. He has become Brahmam. And his nishta, his steadiness, as it becomes more and more matured, he will become free from the Bhuta Prakriti Moksham. Bhuta Prakriti Moksham. That's the word Krishna has used in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhuta Prakriti Moksham, right? That means, while he is inside the body, in the body, he is already transcended Prakriti. Panchabhutam, with the three modes of nature, is Prakriti. Prakriti means three modes of nature, basically. Bhuta Prakriti, Panchabhutam, caught up in the three modes of nature. That is Bhuta Prakriti. So, Krishna will say this in the next chapter. Bhuta Prakriti Moksha. He becomes free from Bhuta Prakriti. Yeah? And that means while he is present in this world, in this body, he has gone beyond the Prakriti, material nature. Established in the self, he become, and while he is within this body itself, he has become free from the Janma Mrtyu Jara Vyadhi. Very highly elevated state, isn't it? You won't find many people in that state, in this world, right? That's why it is called Videha Kaivalyam. You are in the body, but you are liberated already, right? And so that is the end of this chapter. That's what Krishna is talking about in this chapter. Three modes of nature, first he spoke about it, and then he said how to come out of the three modes of nature, being established in the self. And finally Krishna concludes saying that the nature of a person who has become free from the three modes of nature. So, and it is impossible for us even to imagine that, this state. Is it not? It is impossible for us to imagine that, what this state means. We can talk about it like this, but beyond than that. So, he has got a body. He has got a body. His body is getting sick. Diseases are coming to him. And he is also doing different things in this world. But in his experience, ashariram va, body is not there. Ashariram va vasandam, priya priyam. Yeah. He is like the space, not touched by the body at all. Body is not having any effect on him. You can think about it and imagine about it, but to understand it is very difficult. A state that exists like that. Yeah. So, and without a body, simply as a space to remain like that, only he will know that, others won't know that, right? So this is the important of this chapter, that there is an existence like that, freedom from the body, and you can stay in this world without being controlled by the body. A state exists like that. That knowledge Krishna is revealing to us in this chapter, right? So, he mentioned earlier, remember in that 20th verse, he said that, Janma mrti jara dukkha vimuktam amrdam ashnute, he said. 20th verse, Janma mrti jara dukkham vimuktam amrdam ashnute, right? So, and here Krishna is saying there that in the 26th verse, he said, Brahma bhuyaya kalpade, one who has realized that, right? He is not anymore he or she. He is Brahman. And Brahman is not a vastu. It's not a matter thing, like matter, right? Sarvam bhavadi. In other words, he is not a person anymore. He is that bodham. He has become bodham, right? And he is not anymore a personality. Like we are now situated in our personality, in our vyaktitvam, is it not? We all identify with the body, we think we are this person. That means we are situated in the personality. Krishna is saying here that he is not anymore a person. That one, Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpade, means he is not anymore a person. He is Brahman himself. That pure consciousness present in everyone. Remember what mentioned about Shukadeva Goswami? Tam sarvabhuta hridayam muni manatosmi. Present in everyone, that bodham, he becomes that, right? So this state is called gunadita sthiti, one who has become free from the three modes of nature, gunadita sthiti. And as far as Krishna is concerned, one who works for that, he can get there one day, it is possible, right? But this state, Krishna's point is, Antaryami is present in everybody. Krishna is present in everyone as Antaryami. And that is our real identity. So when you realize that, he says, then you are become free from the three modes. That is Krishna's point, right? And that is what is called as Parabhakti or Jivan Mukti. All these are words referring to the same thing. That state when you have become completely free from the body. And this knowledge, what Krishna has spoken here, which is spoken in the Upanishads as well, throughout, this is the main message of Vedic knowledge. And this is why this knowledge is not present anywhere else in the world, spoken so precisely and so explicitly, like the way Krishna has spoken here. Here, Ekadasha Skandam, Krishna has spoken the same thing, and all Upanishads also are talking about the same thing. So, with that, this chapter finishes. And here he says, Brahmana Paramatmano hi asmat pradishta aham, pradidishtadi asmin hi pradishta aham pratyagatma. So, pratyagatma, Antaryami inside, that is the Brahman present inside. in everything, Krishna is saying aham. Not go by that Vasudevan Devaki's son. Krishna is speaking purely on the platform of the Antaryami. And what is the nature of the Brahman? Amrdasya avinashana avyayasya avigarina shashvatasya nityasya dharmasya jnana yoga dharma prapyasya sukhasya anandarupasya aigandikasya avyabhicharinaha. Brahman's nature, it has neither beginning nor end and never affected by any changes. What happens? And eternal. And through jnanam, it is possible to get there. And amrdadi svabhavasya paramatmana pratyagatmana pradishta samyak jnanena paramatmadaya nishrayeda. And antaratma or antaryami has not these kind of things, what body has got. Same what Prahlad has spoken. Remember what Prahlad said? 6 qualities of the body and 12 qualities of the soul, he said. They are very important, what Prahlada said in the Bhagavatam. And Krishna is saying exactly the same thing here, right? Who becomes Brahman? Who realizes that, right? एंड या च ईश्वर शक्तिया भक्तानुग्रहादि प्रयोजनाय ब्रह्म प्रतिष्ठते प्रवर्तते सा शक्ति ब्रह्म एंड सिमिलरली ब्रह्मम द वर्ड व्हाट ही हैज यूज्ड हियर इट इज रेफरिंग टू द निर्विकल्पम दैट मीन्स देयर इज नो विकल्पम देयर देयर इज नो विकल्पम देयर व्हाट इज ही एंड देयर इज नो इट नेवर चेंजेस नो चेंज हैपेंस देयर It's all the same thing what Prahlada has spoken. It never changes, avyayam. And no death is nityam, eternal, it is. And atyantikasya ekantaniyadasya pratishtha ahamidi vartande shashwatam, eternal it is, nityam. And its very nature is knowledge. Very nature is knowledge. And atyantikasukham, ultimate sukham is present in that. So in this way, this Bhagavad Gita, which talks about Brahma Vidya, Yoga Shastram, and in that, this Gunatraya Vibhaga Yogam chapter finishes here. With that, it is finishes here. And now the next chapter is what is called the Purushottama Yogam, right? So Purushottama Yogam, what we are going to talk about after the break is the next chapter. We'll start with that after the break. Cheto darpanam archanam bhaumaha davagdi nirvapanam shreyakaitava chandriya vidaranam vidhyavadhu jivanam anandam budivardhanam pratipada purna amradaswadhanam sarvatna subhanam param vijayade shri krishna sankirtanam नामनामकारि बहुधा निज सर्वशक्ति तत्रार्पिता नेमिदा स्मरणेन काला एतादृशी तव कृपा भगवन् ममापि दुर्दैवमीदृशमिहा जनिनानुरागाः तृणारमेषु नीचेना तरोरवि सहिष्णुना अमानिना मानदेन कीर्तनीय सदा हरि न धनं न जनं न सुन्दरीं कवितां वा जगदीशकामये मम जन्मनी जन्मनीश्वरी भवदाल भक्तिरहै दुगित्वयि आई नंद तनुज किंकरं पतिता मां शमे भवाम्भुदौ कृपया तव पाद पंकज स्थित धूली सदृशं विचिन्तया नयनं गलदशुधारया वदनं गद्गदरुद्धया गिरा पुलकैर्निजितं कदा वपुः तव नाम ग्रहणे भविष्यति युगायुधं निमेषेणां चक्षुषा प्रादिशायुधं शून्यायिदं जगल सर्वं गोविंद विरहे नमे आश्लिष्य वा पादरदां पिनष्टु मां अदर्शनां मर्महदां करोतु वा यथा तथा वा विदधातुलं बडो मल्प्राणनाथासुनये वनापरा सर्वत्र गोविंद नाम संकीर्तनं गोविंद गोविंद 13th chapter was Prakriti Purusha Viveka Yogam. It was called as Prakriti Purusha Viveka Yogam. Purusha and Jnana. Yeah. 14th chapter, we talked about the Kshetra Kshetrajna, what was discussed there as Prakriti and Purusha. Prakriti, material nature, Purusha is the Antaryami. Krishna gave the title as Kshetram and Kshetrajna. In that chapter. I'm just saying how these chapters are all connected to each other. At the end of that chapter, Krishna mentioned that Bhuta Prakriti Mokshancha, last words, Kshetram Kshetratnya Yor Jnanam or Antaram Jnanam Chakshusham Bhuta Prakriti Mokshancha Ye Vidur Yantide Param. The last words he says. If you study that chapter, Krishna says, you will become free from that Bhuta Prakriti Moksham. Bhuta Prakriti Moksham means from freedom from Prakriti, material nature. And in the next chapter, Krishna discussed straight away what Prakriti is, the three modes of nature. So he spoke about Buddha Prakriti Moksham from that chapter. And in the 14th chapter, Kshetra Kshetrajna Yogam, better to use the Sanskrit terminology itself rather than using the English translation. Because Kshetra Kshetrajna, what Krishna addressed as Kshetram and Kshetrajna, is nothing but Prakriti and Purusha, what was discussed earlier. And when, at the end of that chapter, he said, you will get Bhuta Prakriti Mokshanja, Bhuta Prakriti, that is the most important word there. Bhuta Prakriti Moksha means freedom from the grip of this Prakriti, of Panchabhutam and three modes of nature. That is Bhuta Prakriti. Bhuta Prakriti means Panchabhutam, and Panchabhutam means this material elements and material body. This is all Panchabhutam, isn't it? Panchabhutam, five material elements. And Prakriti means, Bhuta Prakriti means the three modes of nature. So we are actually a product of these two. Bhutam, Panchabhutam and Prakriti. Prakriti operating through Panchabhutam and we are trapped in that. Krishna is saying freedom from that is moksham. Bhuta Prakriti Moksha. He mentioned that in that the 13th chapter. At the end of 14th chapter, Krishna spoke about Brahman. And he mentioned basically what he is saying, that this Bhuta Prakriti Moksham in another way he has put it at the end of this 14th chapter. When Krishna discussed this three modes of nature. Gunatraya Vibhaga Yogam. Tattvam is one, but Krishna is presenting it in different angles, from different ways. It's presented to us, so we get the connection between all these things to understand that. Yeah. So, Bhuta Prakriti Moksham he spoke before. In Gunatraya Vibhagam, which is this chapter, 14th chapter, what we discussed now, which we have finished now, that this Gunatraya Vibhaga Yogam, what he has spoken about, is all about these three modes of nature, which is Prakriti. There it was Bhuta Prakriti, here he is talking about the Prakriti only, how to become free from the three modes of nature, right? So, now we are going to another way, which is Purushottama Yogam, Krishna is saying. Purushottama Yogam is the next chapter, right? That's the name of the next chapter. If we can remember the Sanskrit names, it's much easier of all these chapters. Precisely, it tells you what the chapter is saying. Otherwise, it can cause a little bit of problems. Sometimes you get confusion from that. Yeah. So anyway, what is the topic in the Bhagavad Gita? Bhagavad Gita is saying that, when we have a salsangam, when we talk about these things, right? Why do we study Bhagavad Gita? That question will always come, is it not? So, different answers for that. For example, different institutions, they will present Bhagavad Gita differently. You can see that also. One institution will talk in terms of bhakti. Another institution will talk in terms of Jnana Margam, or another one will talk about in Yoga Margam and things like that. Yeah. And therefore what happened now, if you go in the open public, if you talk about Bhagavad Gita, they will say Bhagavad Gita is for personality development. Or they will say for management, you become a good manager if you study Bhagavad Gita very well. Right? Or they study Bhagavad Gita for competition purposes. In different ways, people take to Bhagavad Gita, right? So, it is important to understand where they are coming from, right? In order for people to take Bhagavad Gita seriously, most of the people don't take it seriously. They just study Bhagavad Gita, some verses here and there, and they say, this is what Krishna is saying, and I'm following that. That's what, that finishes there. Well, what Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita, nobody thinks about it, what Krishna is trying, explaining to us, right? So, but in order to give an impression to people that this is what Bhagavad Gita is saying, therefore they have brought up all these things like personality development and management and anger management, pain management, and all sorts of things people use Bhagavad Gita for that purpose, right? So, otherwise, if you tell them Bhagavad Gita is for Adhyatmam, Adhyatmam means self-realization. If it is for that purpose, nobody will take any interest. That's the way it is. Because in their mind inside, they think there's a loads of different types of religions in this world. Which one is correct? Which one is wrong? We don't know that. And that's how their mind is. General people's mind is like that. So when you tell them this is Brahma Vidya, the science of self-realization is Bhagavad Gita, they'll have a little bit of reluctance to take it very seriously, right? So, but when you give interpretations like this, anger management, pain management, and personality development and all that, it actually spoils Bhagavad Gita. You are actually destroying Bhagavad Gita's position, you know, Bhagavad Gita as Brahma Vidya it is. Yeah. So, that is why in the commentary it says that Idam Gita Shastram. Gita is a Shastram it is, right? Samastha Vedartha Sara Sangraha Bhutam Durvitnyayartam Atyantam Uparamalakshanam. All these are in the commentary. In the Acharya Swami says like that, yeah. Samastha Vedartha Sara Sangraha Bhutam Durvitnyayartam Uparamalakshanam. He completes that in his Upodghatam itself. In the introduction itself, he said Bhagavad Gita is very difficult subtopic it is to understand, to absorb it. And Durvijnayartham is very difficult. Because why is it so difficult? Because it is a summary of all the Upanishads is in Bhagavad Gita. Added to that, there is Patanjali's Yoga Shastram there, Mahabharatam is there, and Vedavyasa Jaimini's Karma Sutram is there, Jaimini Sutram is there, Vedavyasa Maharshi's Vedantam is there. So Bhagavad Gita, if you start analyzing, you can see Krishna has taken from everything and put it together in 700 verses in front of us. And that's why it makes it more complex it is to properly get to know Bhagavad Gita, right? So, Gita Bhashyam, he says like that. So, many people who study Bhagavad Gita like that, there are, you can see this, not only Brahmanas, but Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, or whatever whom you would call Hindus, you can say like that. They all study Bhagavad Gita for various reasons, right? And people, not the Hindus only, who are born in Bharata Bhumi, not only them, that there are people from other countries also, other places, also study Bhagavad Gita for various reasons, right? What you have to realize here is that those people who got converted into other faith, like Christianity, Islam, and all that, right? And even for them, and even if you belong to the animal kingdom or the birds, whatever it may be, they all, in Vaidika Sampradayam, they all have a connection with Bhagavad Gita. It will take some time to understand this, to properly see that connection. Whether you are born in the animal kingdom, birds kingdom, or any living entity in this world, what to talk about other faith, even they have a connection with Bhagavad Gita. What that means, whether they agree with or not, that's another thing. That will change because people have different way of thinking differently. So they may agree or not, that's another thing. But if you study Bhagavad Gita properly, you can see the connection. Bhagavad Gita has a connection with all living entities in one form or the other. They have a connection, right? So, and whether they agree or not is another thing, right? The moment you are born, you have fallen into Bhagavad Gita's cycle. You are within the periphery of Bhagavad Gita, right? So, Sanatana Dharmam, that's why it's called a Sanatana Dharma. It was not an invention by an individual. Nobody invented Sanatana Dharma. No one started this. One person didn't start that. And it is not under the banner of one person, or it is not only limited to one book either. Sanatana, basically, as you know, the meaning is timeless. Sanatana means timeless, right? So, it is for this reason only that when we talk about Srimad Bhagavatam, when they say that, then we'll say that it was given to Lord Brahma, Krishna is instructed to Lord Brahma, and after that, Brahma did the creation. That's how it is spoken, isn't it? In the Bhagavatam, Krishna has instructed the knowledge to Brahma, and after giving instructions, Brahma started the creation, right? It is for this reason that if you accept this thing called creation, if you accept that, then Even before creation, this knowledge existed. Even before creation, this knowledge existed. Vedam. Vedam existed even before that. So, Vedam means, what does Vedam mean? Vedam means, it's not just not the sound only. Sound is what Bhagavatam refers to as Shabda Brahmam. Shabda Brahmam, it is referred to in Bhagavatam. That is only one aspect of that. Like Lord Balaram says to Chitraketu, right? So, in Krishna will say in the Bhagavad Gita that who knows Vedam? He says, Vedescha sarvair ahameva vedyo. He uses that word, isn't it? Sarvasya chaham hridi sanyavishto matras madir jnanam apohanam cha Vedescha sarvair ahameva vedyam. When Krishna said that, most of the people take it in one way. They're saying the form person, Krishna understood it that way. That person, only Krishna the person knows Vedam. That is not how you understand that verse. Yeah, that is there, person is there. But if you take it like that, it becomes like religion then. It has become a religion. Like others have started different religions, in the same way Krishna has started a religion. It becomes like that. That is the problem. So that is why that word aham, which we have discussed in this chapter, is so important. Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita from the platform of aham. Aham sarvasya prabhavo. Aham alpa gudakesha. Everywhere he uses, prefer to use the word aham, rather than that person as Krishna. That person Krishna. So, and he's going to say that who has understood Bhagavad Gita properly. So, Bhagavad Gita, studying Bhagavad Gita is not so important. But more important that it should benefit us. By studying Bhagavad Gita, it should benefit us, is it not? So, in this world normally, we have two kinds of education. One is that which saprayojanam it called, and the other one is abhimana prayojanam. What that means is, just like I got sick, I go to a doctor, and he has given me medicines, and I got cured from my illness. That is called saprayojanam, that it's benefited me. That medicine has benefited me, my visit to the doctor was useful, and he has cured me from my disease, right? But that's one way. The other way is that I don't have any disease, right? But for the sake of passing time, I am collecting information from the world everywhere. For vanity's sake, in this way, I'm trying to acquire knowledge, and in that process I'm also studying Bhagavad Gita. So, which is a totally different method, right? The first one is that, like the doctor has treated you and you got cured from your illness, it has helped you. If that way Bhagavad Gita is used, it's beneficial. But just like any other various literatures in this world, if you study Bhagavad Gita also, and only use it for propagation purposes, without getting actually the benefit of Bhagavad Gita, then it will be a waste of time, right? So, just like if you study medical science only for the sake of propagation and for name and fame, then it is only a waste of time. It's not helping anybody. But if we help the people with curing the illnesses, it gets benefited, right? So, so Bhagavad Gita, you can use it for either way, right? And that is why it is, when you can see in the YouTube and in the media, a lot of times people reciting Bhagavad Gita, it is recorded and then it is put on the YouTube for people to hear. That's all in one level only. That's in, only in that level, right? And from that, what is the benefit? You get to know the verses, what is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. It's not helping you. The person is not helping, right? So, because we do not know the highest benefit of Bhagavad Gita, how that can change us, our way of approaching towards this life in this world, right? Or that yoga, yogam, andariga yogam, that is a yogam related to our real existence, right? Therefore, we are giving importance to these less important, silly things, what we give importance to Bhagavad Gita. We use Bhagavad Gita for propaganda purposes or silly things like that, without fully realizing the power of that knowledge what has been given in the Bhagavad Gita. So, they are all external benefits, like you put it through the YouTube or YouTube through the reciting competitions, Bhagavad Gita, and things like that. But if the message is not getting through to the people, then rishis are saying to us that if you look at Bhagavad Gita from the point of view of the rishis and the point of view of the acharyas, great personalities like Shankaracharya and others, if you look at from their position, what they are saying to us is that Bhagavad Gita is capable of completely relieving your distress in life. That's how they put it. Completely capable of relieving all our distress in this world, right? First thing they all say to us, that if you have taken birth in this world, distress is a part of that. That's the first thing to recognize. If you come to this world, you cannot choose. You may get some happiness, but a lot of distress. That's a part of the offer, part of the package, right? And that is why we have got this name Jandu. Jandu means one who has taken birth. We are all Jandu. Although it's offensive to say to someone he is a Jandu. If you say like that, it's considered to be like an animal, isn't it? Jandu. Jandu is referred to animals, right? But in the Bhagavatam, freely, Kapila Maharshi is in the third canto, you will say, Jandustuti comes there. Jandu Ruvaja, it says, referring to us, very freely spoken as Jandu. Because spiritual knowledge is not there, he is a Jandu. No matter who it is, whoever it may be, if he has no spiritual understanding or spiritual realization, he is just a Jandu, not better than that, right? So, Jayate Idi Jandu. In Shastram, they will very openly say to us, Jayate Idi Jandu. If you have taken birth, you are a Jandu, right? So, and whoever has taken birth, he gets it free. What? Dukkha, distress. It's available freely. You won't have to worry about it, right? And so, and if this dukkham is not there in life, suppose there is no dukkham, no distress at all, nobody will come to hear Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam. That's also a fact, isn't it? Because we know there is dukkham, it's a part of the life in this world, right? So, that is why it is mentioned there, Atyanta Ubarama Lakshanam. If you look on the Ubodhadam, it is says that the Samasta Vedartha Sara Sangraha Bodham Durvijnayartham. And then he is saying that the Tasya Gita Shastrasya Samkshaptam Prayojanam Param Nishrayasam Sahedugasya Samsarasya. You see, Ajari Swami very precisely defined that there. Samsarasya Atyantam Ubarama Lakshanam, he said. Freedom from material existence you want, Bhagavad Gita is for that. Samsarasya Atyanta Uparama Lakshanam. How to come out of this samsaram, material existence itself, that is what for Bhagavad Gita is meant to be. Not for any all the other things. It's only when you have that benefit, you got the benefit of Bhagavad Gita. He says here, Atyanta Uparama Tatcha Sarva Karma Sanyasa Purvagat Alpajnana Nishtha Rupat Dharmat Bhavati. So, and so he defined it in that way, and then he mentions there that the Atyanta Uparama Lakshanam, as he mentions there. So this Adhyalpa Shastram is capable of completely uproot the distress what we have to go through in this world. In material existence, right? And that is why it's called Adhyalpa Shastram. Adhyalpa Shastram it is, right? Adhyalpa means what? Adhyalpa means that much fact, that thing what is related to soul, Atma. That's called adhyalpam. Adhyalpam means the knowledge related to the soul, not to the body, related to the soul. So, and what that means is, related to the soul means what is related to us in reality. We are the soul, we are not the body, isn't it? So, when they say adhyalpa means that is related to Atma, which means it is related to you, actually, every one of us, right? So, this is the only shastram in the creation that is actually related to us. Related to us, right? All other shastram what we have in this world is all about things what is not related to us. Even if it is about the body, body is not us, ours, isn't it? It has come from Prakriti and Prakriti will take it off. So any science what you have developed around the body is not centered around you, it is centered around the body. Similarly, all the other science in this world related to various things, economics, history, and science, modern science, biology, zoology, whatever it may be, they are all related to things which is separate from you, which is separate from you, right? So, strictly speaking, only Adhyalpa Vidya is the only thing actually centered around you, really speaking. Really, strictly speaking, this science, Brahma Vidya or Adhyalpa Vidya, is the only Vidya what is centered around really about you. All other things are centered around something else. What is centered around the body, centered around the mind, centered around the intelligence, they are all separate from you, separate topics they are. Strictly speaking, the only science that teaches us about us, Adhyalpa Vidya, is Brahma Vidya. And that is why this is such an important book, Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita's importance to understand why we can't compare Bhagavad Gita with any other book. Therefore, Acharya Swami says here, Brahma Vidya, Brahma Vidya, Sarva Vidyanam, Brahma Vidyam Pratishtam. All other Vidya is separate from you. But Brahma Vidya is about you. You are Brahma Vidya. About you, the science around you is Brahma Vidya. All other things are dependent on this Brahma Vidya. Because if you are not there, all other things don't exist. All other Vidya has no significance if you are not there, is it not? So, Brahma Vidya is about you, therefore it's more important. And all other Vidya is dependent on this Brahma Vidya. That is why Brahma Vidya is so important. Yeah? So, that is the topic that is discussed. And proper knowledge about us, of the real self, right? And that is a topic in the Vedam, in the Upanishads. Upanishad, Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Sutra. These are the three prasanatrayam. That means the three prasanam comes from these three. They all talk about the same thing, but in three different ways. Bhagavad Gita, Upanishads, Brahma Sutra, which we call as Vedanta Sutra, right? So, all these things, out of this, Bhagavad Gita is nothing but a extension of Upanishads. Krishna has taken Upanishads and summarized it, basically. You know, if you study Bhagavad Gita, you will notice it. Kathopanishad is there, Chandokyam is there, Shedashudra Upanishad is there. All Upanishads, Krishna has taken and summarized it in Bhagavad Gita. Right? So, so in one sense you can say, it is Krishna's commentary on Upanishads. That's another way of putting it. Krishna's commentary on Upanishads. Having taken all the Upanishads, major Upanishads he has taken, and from that knowledge he has put it together and given it to us in the form of Bhagavad Gita. So, yeah. So, similarly, when we talk about Vedantam means what? Vedantam means end of knowledge, is it not? There is no knowledge after that. There is nothing to inquire after that, right? So, Vedantam, you know, when you study Vedantam, what they will talk about is that it takes you to a level where you become free from this curiosity to know more goes away from you once for all, because you got the final conclusions and you have realized it, and then you don't want to know anything anymore. That's what is called a jijnyasa nivritti. You don't have any jijnyasa anymore. Jijnyasa has finished. there. Then they will call few things like that: jihasa nivritti, prayatsa nivritti, chigirsha nivritti. Nivritti. Nivritti means you're getting released from all other things, right? So Vedanta means that it's a medicine for this, right? And if you take these medicines, what the benefit is, only you will get the benefit first. That's another thing, you have to remember this. This medicine is for you. And if you take this medicine, you will get the benefit, not anybody else. That's the way it is, right? So it is based on the soul, it is Atmanishtam. It's not like science, modern science. There's a difference between modern science and the Bhagavad Gita. So, just for example, in science, say, for example, you can say any invention like Edison found developed this bulb, electric bulb, isn't it? It's Edison's invention, it is, right? But that bulb, what Edison has invented, it was not only benefit for him, others also got the benefit from that. The bulb will burn for Edison as well as for anybody else, what he found out, right? Same thing with computers also. We have found out if everybody has got now. Desktop has all gone and laptops have come and taken over. And now that's also going and something else is coming, all of that, right? So that is Baudhya Vidya. Baudhya, material knowledge is like that, right? And just like when you are identifying with the body, if I'm hungry, if I eat the food, only I will get the benefit. Others won't get the benefit, right? Similarly, with the mind also, if I pick up something, I will get the benefit, right? You won't get the benefit, I'll get the benefit, right? So, all these things is not Brahma Vidya. All this is not Brahma Vidya, right? This is a Vidya that has to work inside us. Which one? This Brahma Vidya. It is a Vidya that has to work inside us, right? And what is the Swarupam? What is the nature of this Vidya? Vidya is very simple. In Krishna says, in the 9th chapter Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has spoken that Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam, he said. Remember that verses, yeah? They are so important. When he is referring, what is Krishna has to say about Bhagavad Gita? That's what that verse is. Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam, Vavitram Idam Uttamam, Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam, Susukham Kartum Avyayam. He began that chapter like that, the 9th chapter, right? So, the speciality of this Vidya, Brahma Vidya, Krishna has spoken in that chapter, in the 9th chapter, right? First of all, he calls it as Raja Vidya. He calls it as Raja Vidya. In other words, compared to all other Vidya, all other knowledge what you collect, acquire in this world, compared to that, this Vidya will shine in a person more. It is much more powerful in a person, this Raja Vidya, right? In other words, this Brahma Vidya, once it has come to someone, he will ignore all other Vidya. He won't be attracted to any other Vidya, provided he gets Brahma Vidya. If Brahma Vidya gets into a person, he will know that all other Vidya is inferior Vidya. They have no value anymore. Because Brahma Vidya does that, he liberates a person, all other Vidya is considered to be avidya. From the Shastram point of view, you got to know this because Brahma Vidya, why it is different from other Vidya? That is why they divided that into Paravidya and Aparavidya. Aparavidya is all avidya it is. None of the other things will help you to get Brahma Vidya. And that is the reason they are all categorized into avidya. Aparavidya, avidya. Bhagavad Gita Bhashyam says so. Aparavidya is avidya it is. It is because of that avidya we have got this problem today, not able to relate with Bhagavad Gita. We are having problem because of that. Because so much avidya we have pumped inside, now we have to clear up all that avidya first to understand. That's why when you say to someone, there is a soul in the body, he's saying, what is this soul? I have not seen that. They are arguing like this. Even though there is such an ample proof in the Bhagavad Gita that Antaryami is there, without Antaryami, the person is dead, the dead body is lying there. Who left the dead body? You ask the question, they have no answer for that. He says, oh no, these things came together and there was life in that. Life doesn't come like that. That's a misunderstanding. So, therefore, is Krishna mentioned there that this Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam, he said, the next word, it's a royal secret, he said. Remember that? Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam, he says. It's a royal secret. And why is it called a royal secret? In the olden days, when the kings ruled, a lot of things happens in the palace. And if anybody reveals that to the public outside, gone. Head will be gone. That's how they ruled. And sometimes some princess may have some affair with somebody. And that is not supposed to happen because Kshatriya kings, they will marry among the royal families only. So if there is any relationship by princess with someone, they fall. And then if the people who are in the palace, if they reveal that outside to somebody, and if the king finds out, gone, be gone. So it is similar to that, this Brahmavidya also. Krishna is saying that. It is similar like that, this Brahmavidya. Why? It cannot be revealed. You should not reveal it to anybody. It's an open secret. What it means is, even if it is revealed to somebody, you won't get it. That is the problem with Bhagavad Gita. You can read Bhagavad Gita, you can listen to Bhagavad Gita, but you won't get it. Therefore, he is saying, even if you can get it, unless you come into contact with it, with this knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita, right? So that is why he is calling it as Raja Guhyam. Naturally, a question comes, if it is so confidential, why Krishna is speaking this so openly? That question will come, is it not? If it is so confidential, and then Krishna is speaking very openly to everybody, and Krishna is saying that this is the nature of this Brahmavidya is such that even if you say this to someone, you cannot get it unless you have connected to Bhagavad Gita properly. Unless that knowledge goes in, the benefit won't be there. You won't understand it. That means the effect of Bhagavad Gita is so strong, Brahmavidya, because it's about us, you see. And we have lost that completely. And we thinking that I'm this body, I'm this mind, I'm this intelligence, and this world is very real. And in that conscience, we are living in this world. So that shows the amount of avidya what is inside us. So when he said that it is Raja Guhyam, extremely confidential, he didn't mean that. Not that you hear through the ear, not in that way. For example, when Upanayanam ceremony is performed, when the Brahmana boys are initiated, right? Second initiation as we call it now. Upanayanam ceremony, the Brahmachari is sitting there, the father is there, and normally the father is the guru at that time, and then there is an Acharya who is performing the ceremony, all that. So all three of them together, the Acharya, the father and the son together, the Gayatri is recited to him, to the child who is listening to that, and in the form of Chandas. I'm talking about the traditional system, not what is happening in the modern days, right? So, you may or may not know, I don't know whether you are aware of this. Traditionally, when they give Gayatri Mantram, they will put a cloth on the head and cover the face. Yeah, the reason for that. That is a symptom of this Raja Guhyam, that it is a confidential thing, it's not for everybody. Therefore, they put a cloth on while they recite the Gayatri Mantram to the Brahmachari. It is done like that, normally. Traditionally, if you go back into Brahmana families, when they initiate, that is the system. They'll cover the face with a cloth while giving the Gayatri Mantram to the person. Yeah. So, now Gayatri is given in mobile phone. So now it is a different world. We are completely everything changed, right? And some people have got the ringtone Gayatri Mantra in their mobile phone. So it has come to this level now. What you're supposed to do? So modern world changes everything. Yeah, they use the Gayatri Mantra as a ringtone in the mobile phone, and they think that they have making spiritual advancement by. So whenever the phone rings, you are listening to the Gayatri. So this is a modern way of understanding things, right? Because some people think like that, I am always listening to Gayatri Mantra, so that shows that I am very spiritual. And so things like that, but that's all superficial, completely superficial, right? So here, what Krishna is talking about is something different, yeah? He is saying here that whether you are a Hindu, Christian, Muslim, or whatever you may be, man, animal, or bird, or plant, or a tree, wherever there is life, this science applies. Bhagavad Gita applies to all. In what sense, right? So, Gayatri Mantra is a chandasa, chandoba baddham it is called. Like a chandasa it is. That means everything is very structured. And you know, in Bhagavatam, Krishna talks about that in Ekadasham. Gayatri, Anushtupa, Chandasa, what they are, how, depends on how many letters. Anushtupa is the 32 letters, which we call as the verses now. 32 letter verses, right? And then there's other things, also he has said that in the 11th canto, right? So, Gayatri is a Chandasa, says Vedam. And even if you have not understood that, doesn't matter, but while reciting that, it should be correct. You cannot mispronounce it, or you cannot chant the mantra in the wrong way. The sound has importance there, right? Otherwise, it won't be benefited. That is why, guys, you remember what happened. It is in the Bhagavatam, this story. Our Bharata, King Bharata, right? When he became Jatabharata in his third birth, his father tried to teach him Gayatri. It's only 32 letters in that. 60 letters, I think. Yeah, in that. Yeah, Om Bho. When you look at it, it's so simple, right? But even though his father tried to teach him that, Gayatri, so months and months, he could not pronounce it properly. He could not speak that Gayatri. And then his father gave up. Father got so frustrated, and because of his frustration, it affected his mind, and in that depressed state, he died. Bharata's father. Now, if you study Bhagavatam, it is good, because there what you will come to know is, Bharata has gone beyond Gayatri and all. You see, Bharata, he was called a Jata Bharata, isn't it? That Jatatvam in him, he exhibited Jatatvam outwardly. Inside he was realized. So therefore Gayatri is not anymore. When do you need Gayatri? Till you realize the self. Once you have realized the self, you don't need Gayatri anymore. Gayatri's purpose is finished. Purpose of Vedam is finished. Purpose of chanting is finished. Once you have realized the truth. Andaryami, right? So Bharata was in that state. For him now, Gayatri has no meaning anymore. So that is why when his father tried to teach him, he was not taking any interest in that, because it's not affecting, it's not beneficial to him anymore, nor it has any, it's not going to have any input into his spiritual life. So he has gone beyond than that. That is why it is said like that, right? So, but how long does it take to teach Gayatri someone? Nowadays we print it out in the paper, right? And you ask 10 devotees to chant, 10 people will chant 10 different ways. The same Gayatri Mantra. Because to get that, the tongue has to agree with it. When you speak each syllable in the Gayatri Mantra, when you pronounce that, the tongue has to agree with it, right? So therefore, if you go into Veda Padashala, where they teach Vedam, the teacher will sit individually in front of every child who is in the Veda Padashala, and he has to make sure that the sound he is coming out from his mouth is correctly representing that letter. If it is not, he has to make adjustments with his head. He will twist his head, and you may think that it is child abuse. It's not child abuse. He is trying to train that child how to bring the correct sound from his throat. It has to come out this correct sound, representing that letter properly in the what is spoken in the Gayatri Mantra. It is a difficult one. It takes sometimes months to get a child. The child is only 8 or 9 years old who is learning this Gayatri Mantra, right? So, till he get it right, they won't let him go. Till he gets it right. So, that is how they study this Gayatri. Anyway, here, Krishna is saying that this Vidya, Brahma Vidya, hearing is one thing, right? Then reflection on Bhagavad Gita is another thing. To reflect on this Bhagavad Gita's knowledge or what we have heard, to reflect on that is another thing. And then experiencing that is another thing. It's all three different levels, isn't it? First of all, you hear Bhagavad Gita, something has gone inside, right? And most of the people, it's gone as soon as you go. It's over, finished. I heard it today, that's it. And then you have forgotten completely. Some people who are very serious, they will take it and think a little bit more, take Bhagavad Gita and look at it and start analyzing things. Mananam will happen. That means Shravanam has gone one step further, what we call as Mananam. But Mananam also, up to a certain level only, it can go. But after that, when it goes into experience level, Mananam, and then comes Nididhyasanam, what they call it. When it comes to experience level, then it is a different situation altogether. So, while hearing it is one level, while reflection on that is another level, experiencing it is in another level. So, three different levels it happens in that way, right? So, Narayana Guru talks about that. He says that even if you are not able to realize this Bhagavad Gita's knowledge, right, somehow or the other you should sit with people who has realized it, if that an opportunity, and even if you taken something out of that, he says that your life will become benefited. Shanti, peace or samadhanam will come from that, right? So, life is considered to be like Krishna said in the third chapter, it's like a sacrifice it is, is it not? Life is like a sacrifice. Sacrifice means, in what context Krishna said that? Krishna is saying, if you use this life, you perform Vedic sacrifices, right? Different types of Vedic sacrifices. All that purpose of that sacrifice has got a particular goal. Adhiratram, Agnishtomam, Vajapayam, Rajasuyam, Ashwamedham, all different types of sacrifices, they all have got a goal in that, with a certain purpose. And for that purpose, you are performing that sacrifice. Krishna is saying, this life itself has to be made a sacrifice in that way. Yeah? And and that sacrifice is yajnam. Shastram is called yajnam. That yajnam has to be completed, and it is only complete when you have realized the truth. What is that truth? To realize who you are. Self-realization, in other words, right? So, therefore, this knowledge, what the rishis are giving it to us, is considered to be the topmost knowledge, and there is no knowledge after that. Brahma vidya sarva vidyam pratishtam. A very strong definition like that, yeah? Nobody will, from in the Vedic tradition, will accept any other knowledge superior to Brahma Vidya. Brahma Vidya comes to a person, he is complete then. He doesn't need anything after that. Right? So, if this Brahma Vidya comes to a person, all other Vidya is not any more important for him. Everything finishes there. So that is the reason, normally, in the Vedic education also, Vedantam is taught at the end. Grammar and similarly you know, Ayurvedam and Gandharva Veda music and Niruktam, Jyotisham, Kalpam, which are the different branches of learning in the Shastram. First, they will teach all those things. But this Brahma Vidya, science of self-realization, is taught at the very end of everything. Because after that, the other things are not any more significant. Right? That is the sampradaya. The system is like that. Right? Now it has become like colleges, schools, everywhere. So, in the olden days, before colleges and universities and all has come, right? They will, once they are sent, children are sent to the Gurukulam, they won't teach Vedantam there. First they will teach them the Vedic literature, Sahityam for example, the literature side of it. Then Tarkam, logic, arguments and all that. Then Ayurvedam, these things they will study first. And only after that Vedantam will be taught. And Vedam was never taught. Instead, grammar, Vyakaranam, Sahityam, literature, Tarkam, logic, and astrology, Jyotisham, all these things will be taught. Vedantam will be only taught among the students, those who want it. Only those who want it, they will be taught. There are two reasons for that. One, many of them are not qualified for it. Adhikaritam, no, they will look at it. Everybody is not qualified to acquire this knowledge of the self. They are not ready for it. Yeah, Adhikaritam is there. Then another side to it is that if they study Vedantam first, then they will not think about studying anything else. There is another side to it also. Once they study Vedantam, first of all, to get people qualified to study Vedantam is very few. Everyone won't be able to take to it, right? Because it requires a different frame of mind, mindset, right? So, therefore, they won't teach them, everybody. Secondly, once they have learned it, then, after that, they won't show any interest to learn anything else. Because that's the strength of Vedanta, the power of Vedanta, right? Because the moment you have understood Bhagavad Gita properly, you will have no value for any other knowledge. That's the beauty. Because you are realizing what the truth is, once it is realized, then Vedantam, that's what it leads to. Then after that, you don't want to know anything in this world. Even if somebody tells you any other knowledge, you will have no interest in that, right? So, that is the power of this Brahma Vidya, right? Either you will become a Rishi, or you will become a Jnani, or you will become a Jivan Mukta, liberated soul. That is how effective this Brahma Vidya is, right? So what is happening is, while you are living in this world, in this body, at the same time, your connection with the Antaryami, Krishna inside, is established. That's the benefit. While living in this world, in this body itself, you have become free from the body and you have got connected with the source, Antaryami inside, right? So, and when you come to that connection with the Antaryami at that time, it makes that person perfect and he doesn't want to know anything after that. Yeah. And so when, just like children, when they talk to each other, they will talk about many things, what they have learned in the school, or they learn from the science, and things like that, right? And there will be very serious discussions, because they will think that, because they are taking the science very seriously, and scientific discoveries, and all that will have an influence on their way of thinking, and you can see people argue on that basis, is it not? In this world, when you want to convince somebody, you'll say it's scientifically proven, we will say like that. And you may have some documents or some authority to prove that what you are saying is accepted in the scientific society. That's how you present it, like that, right? But Brahma Vidya is of a different category. That's the difficulty with Brahma Vidya. You can see how Brahma Vidya becomes more and more difficult as you get closer to it, right? So, when you are those who have realized Brahma Vidya, okay, who have got this Brahma Vidya, what will happen to you is that for them, they will see this science, modern science, and they will see this world in a different way. Like how? When children, when they are playing, when small children, when they are playing, they will take the role, I am father, you are mother, and you are the children in that way. They make a family together. The children themselves make it while playing together, right? So one who has realized Brahma Vidya, one who has realized this Brahma Vidya, for him, this world will be like that, like child's play. The world is a child's play for him. He has come out of that, right? So, you know how children, when they play, they'll say, we cook rice. Children, small children, they do like that, right? And they, so for one who has realized this Brahma Vidya, and for him, there is no science after that to know anything more than that. So, therefore, because that's all avidya it is, you see. Therefore, it is customary practice that you don't teach Brahma Vidya in the beginning. You teach all other avidya first, and then only those who are qualified among them, ready for Brahma Vidya, only they are taught Brahma Vidya. That is the traditional method. Otherwise, what will happen is it will be abused. All misunderstanding will come, because Brahma Vidya requires a different nature in a person. Yeah. So, therefore he is saying here, first he should come through avidya before you get to know Brahma Vidya. He should come through avidya before he come to Brahma Vidya, right? sometime in the life, this Brahma Vidya must come, right? So, because only Brahma Vidya will satisfy us at the end. Shanti will come only from Brahma Vidya. And all other Vidya will put us in Prakriti. That's the problem. Only Brahma Vidya takes us out of Prakriti. Prakriti, you know what we discussed last chapter, three modes of nature. All other Vidyas in this world, if you study, it will keep you inside Prakriti, in the three modes of nature. Brahma Vidya is the only Vidya that makes you free from Prakriti. Makes you free from Prakriti. Remember Krishna said Prakritistham. He used the word Prakritistham. That's the word Krishna has used. Prakritistham means one who is inside the Prakriti, in the three modes. And Brahma Vidya makes you Swastham, situated in the self, right? So, in these two words, Prakritistham and Swastham, the two words which we have come across in the last chapter, right? In there, everything is covered. Prakritistham means everything what else. Swastham means Brahma Vidya. Swastham means Brahma Vidya. Swastham, just we ask people, in normal conversation, people ask, you know what happens? People after retirement, one person got, he retired from his working life. He was probably 65, 70 years old, whatever it is. He got retired. Then he has got free time now, because he is, so then somebody else, his friend met him on the road, and he says to him, asked him about how are things and everything. He said, oh, I'm retired. So this person says to him, you are Swastham now, aren't you? That means you are living without any trouble, and that's all he means by that. Bhagavad Gita, when he says Swastham, is different. It's not that Swastham. Suppose you are retired and living a quiet life, family life at home, peaceful, having your meals at time, sleeping on time, and relaxed about everything. That is also called Swastham. But that Swastham is not what Krishna Swastham is. Krishna Swastham is, when you are not Prakritistham, you are in Swastham. When you are not, but this person who is retired, he is not free from Prakriti. He is still Prakritistham. But they will address it like that. This is the problem. You see, many words in Sanskrit, when it comes to mundane world, vyavaharam, whole meaning changes. Guru, the word has meaning has changed. Pandita, the word has changed. Every single word in the Shastram, when it comes into our colloquial language, the meaning gets changed. Is it not? You know. Yeah. Now everything there is a guru. He says he's the guru of what he called the basketball or guru of the football. And things like that people are saying. How guru has got to do with football and basketball? So that is how it is. The word, how the meaning changes, right? So, so Prakritisam means, Prakritisam, where is your Shraddha? That's where you are. Bhagavad Gita says, where is your Shraddha? That's where you are. For example, I'm sitting here, I'm thinking something happening in Mumbai. That means, what does that mean? I'm in Mumbai, basically, right? So, that means I'm in Mumbai, if I'm thinking about Mumbai, right? And sitting here, if I'm thinking about something, I am there, right? And that is what's called a prakritistam, right? Suppose I'm thinking about my body all the time, what is that? I'm sharirastam. I'm prakritistam then, right? And if I'm thinking about the mind, what the thoughts are coming, I'm prakritistam. That is all prakritistam, it is, right? And in Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti, in the three states also, the jiva is prakritistam. Do you know that? In Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti, the three states also, the jiva is prakritistam. He is in the prakriti. Because these three modes are happening, it's in the three modes you are. These three states are coming from the three modes, is it not? So therefore you are still in the prakritistam, right? Only when self-realization happens, you come to swastam. What Krishna said in the last chapter. Remember? Swastam he spoke about? That swastam. In the last verse, end he mentions that, isn't it? Last verses. Samadukha sukha swastam. That word. Swastam. So Krishna swastam is different. He say when he has become free from the three modes of nature, then you are in swastam, not otherwise. Yeah. So having said that, he says that because once this Brahmavidya goes in, right? It is only given to a person when his knowledge of spiritual life has come to a certain level. Otherwise, it won't work for him. Early days, if you give that, it may not have its desired result, right? And even in Ayurveda, I mentioned this before, that the if suppose sometimes some disease somebody has got, right? And you have tried all treatment, it's not working. Nothing is happening to him. That because prarabdham is so strong, treatment is not working. If it comes to a level, what the Ayurveda generally does is, at that time, they'll give Vedantam as a medicine to them. At that stage. Because treatment is not working. Right? Not like these days, what we do is, we'll try. And then the doctors will use your body for their experiment. They'll say, we'll try this out. If that's not working, let's try this. In other words, he's doing research on your body. You are dying. Anyway, you are suffering. So he say, the doctor is thinking, he's suffering anyway, what can I do? So some another drug manufacturer, he'll bring a new medicine into the market. And he must have heard about this. And they're all working together very well in that process, right? So they will induce him, you try this medicine for this disease. Because sometimes you can see, two people have got the same disease, right? You gave the medicine, it worked for one person, it didn't work for the other. It happens like that. From that itself you can understand that the curing of the disease is not purely due to medicine. Medicine is not, in that is, Vedam will not accept it. Antaryami cures the disease. If Antaryami decides you should have the sickness, you have to suffer from that, you've got to go through it. You have no choice there. only Antaryami sanctions that. That is why in Vishnu Sahasranamam, what it is said, Beshajam Bishaka, doctor is Krishna, medicine is Krishna. If it all has to work together, Krishna has to approve that. Only then you get free from the disease. That is the Vedic knowledge. Vedic conception is like that. Not that if you this medicine doesn't work, Pfizer has brought another one, I'll try that. Or Glaxo has brought another one, we'll try that. If that works, if that doesn't work, we'll get something else. So there's so many medicines also available in this world. Finally, if everything is not working, is dead and gone, gone, what can you do? This is how medicine works. I mean, it's nothing new about it. Nothing special about it, right? So in Ayurveda, the approach is, they are a little bit more conscious of these things, that they believe in Antaryami. And they know that most of the Ayurvedic physicians have studied Vishnu Sahasranamam. And they very explicitly mention there that he is the doctor, he is the medicine, and the curing process is also him. Beshajam, Bishaka, everything is him. And because they are conscious of that, what they will do is, they will try all the medicines. If it's not working, they know that it is his prarabdham to go through. He has to suffer from that. So they will, at that time, give Vedantam as a medicine to him. So that at least the man dies, leave this world in the right consciousness of knowing that he is not the body. That's the idea of doing that. That he can live in Sattvagunam, at least you are live, if you have that concept inside, that I'm not this body, and able to leave this world, what that means is you are living in Sattvagunam. And that Sattvagunam will help him, at least he is going to a better destination, with that understanding. Yeah. So that's the reason behind that. So, and therefore, to realize that perfection is this Antaryami inside, that is the truth what we are looking for, to realize that truth inside, right? And we establish in that, and it is ultimately required. So, and the old age, at the old age, you can't do anything about it. By then, our, we are close to the expiry date, isn't it? Like all the other things. Medicine also, when it is very close to expiry date, you will keep thinking about it. It's very close to expiry date. It's just the same thing with our body also, in the same way, right? And nothing will work sometimes. So this vidya is required. and this vidya, therefore Bhagavatam says, you should have it when you are very small. Kaumara Ajare Prajna. Prahlada said that, is it not? You know, Prahlada talked about us in a very... We are all, in Prahlada's language, we are called, you know what the word he has used? Kudumba Ramas. We are also Ramas, but only thing is we are Kudumba Ramas. We are not Atma Ramas. Atma Ramas are those who are absorbed in the self. Kudumba Ramas are those who are absorbed in the family life. So he has put that very strongly in the seventh canto, that being a Kudumba Rama is not helpful for spiritual life. Yeah, some point in time one has to become free from this Kudumba Rama thought. Kudumba Rama means that is no choice, no chance. He said, right? So, yeah. So that's what he mentioned to his children. He mentioned to other boys there, right? So, so Prahlada says this to the children, and we will start discussing this chapter tomorrow. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.